Choose your next words carefully, Leonidas. They may be your last.
Madman. You're a madman. Blasphemy. This is madness.
This is Sparta!
Who do we have left? Britney Spears? Cam Kardashian? Paris Hilton? Yeah, that's what we have to look forward to, Kanye West. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. We're global. Shop, S-H-O-P-P-E. Oh, look at you! All right, everybody, I'll be right with you. I'm a good guy. If you attack us, I attack you. Here, hello, my name is Brian Hammer Jackson, and you're with the Brian Hammer Jackson Show. Boy, it was powerful. This is a no-win situation. I'll give you a call in about an hour and a half. You know what I mean? I survived it, and I'm at the end of it.
Oppressors of generations who have kept you down with myths of opportunity, and we give it back to you, the people.
Brother, it is time for the mortals to pay.
Release the Kraken!
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the show. Wow, we're like half an hour late from our regular programming, but hey, we're getting there. It's like, what, 11th day of Christmas now? It's 11 or 10. Wait, no, it's 10 days of Christmas. 10 days of Christmas right now. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. I am your host, Brian Hammer Jackson. We are worldwide. We talk about things that nobody dared talk about. We talk about things that you won't say out loud. We talk about things you say in a divorce. Or we talk about things you say you're innocent, but you really killed a bitch. It's our show. Welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome. If you'd like to join me, and you should because I'm very elusive. I'm like a unicorn. You have to catch me when I'm there and I fly away. My number is 319-527-6099. 319-527-6099. That's the number. That's the number to get on the air. You know what's fun to get on the air? I'll tell you what's fun when I was a kid. I'll tell you what's fun. I used to listen to a radio show, right? I did this when I was an early adult. And I just wanted to call in to hear my voice on the radio. And then when you finally get through, you act like an idiot and a moron, and you wish you never called in. But it doesn't matter. That's what you do. That's what you do. So if you'd like to come in on the show, it's an internet show, so you can call in, you can listen to your voice, you can act like a moron, and then you can always save it and go, you see, that's grandma when she was a moron, and that's dad when he was an asshole. It's a great gift for holidays. That's what you do. You're welcome to come in. You know, so we have had a lot of people on this show, man. A lot of people on the show. I have had a lot of executive producers on my show. We've been on the show more than, some people said 15 years, some people say 11 years. I don't know. I have dementia. I'm thinking this is my first day. Dementia is great. You know what dementia, why dementia is so good? Because you forget about the bad shit. The bad thing is you forget about the good shit. You can't have everything. But some people say 15, some people say 11. I think it's pretty damn good. Many people have been on this show, many executive producers. And, you know, it's really funny. Some executive producers think, you know, you do a project with them, all of a sudden they don't do what they're supposed to do, and they'd rather sell shit instead of really working for the people. Yeah. But you know what? I'm going to give her some love because she's supposed to be promoting an event, but instead, this is what she's doing. So I'm going to give her some love. And she's trying to make a living. Instead of believing in the show, believing in me, making good money, they decide to do the easy. You know, when you do the easy things, it never works out. You take the shortcut, not really. But you can tell a person's priority. But I'm going to give them some love. I'm going to say I'm a bigger person because I'm going to tell people what you're doing, and maybe they can help you out because you need a little help. So here's what you decide to do. Well, you know what? Not going to do it. But that's an old post. Let's see, where's the new post? Is that, did you block me? No, I'm not. Okay, that was an old post, so I'm not going to do it. They put up a Christmas tree. Oh, there's a beautiful Christmas. Well, I was leaning to the side, and it's going to fall down. Well, what can you do? It's a crooked tree. Okay. Well. Okay. Well, here's a post. You know, you lift something up and then they fall down. Here it goes, the last post. Who would be interested in joining a fun group? Right there, I'm out. Right there, I'm out. You know, it's funny. A death to a comedian is when they say, hey, a funny guy's coming on and he's going to make you laugh. And the comedian shits his pants because that's a lot of pressure. Who would be interested in joining a fun group where we share videos each day? We share videos each day? Yeah, that's what I want to do. Let's share videos on the internet. Isn't that fun? And then we can talk about our goals they're going to talk about their goals that you'll never get there. It's called a dream. Forget about your goals. You know what a goal is? You do something to reach a certain point to achieve it. It's not goals. It's a dream. You'll never get there. And your accomplishments. Apparently, you don't have many accomplishments because why would you be writing, let's talk about our accomplishment. Isn't that called bragging? And let's talk about daily life and more. That's going to be great. Let's talk about your daily life. Like, I'm really interested in, people coming into the show, and let's just talk about your daily life. Let's do it. The fall from grace. It makes me become stronger and better. The title is, people go, why do you go, Well, that's, you know, when those, you call the companies and they put you on hold and you have the music, and you know, the music you're playing, then they come back on. Well, we can't really afford the music because it costs a lot of money. So we make up our own music. It's a good tune. If you listen to it, you'll be humming it. I guarantee you, if you listen to you will be doing that subconsciously while you're cooking, while you're reading, going to the store, in your car. I guarantee you, you will do it subconsciously because you cannot do it subconsciously, stop it from doing it subconsciously. It's just, it's very easy. The lyrics are very cool. Short version. Title of the show today. Title of the show. Some people need killing. I said in the beginning, we talk about shit that people don't want to talk about. We talk about shit, we invade other shit that people dare stay away from. People run from the fire, we run towards the fire. Some of us jump in. That's what we do. That's how we roll. We lose a lot of listeners that way, but hey, it's fun to see them jump in the fire. Cool shit. Remember that song? You will put it in your head. I guarantee you'll be doing it. Some People Need Killing. We're going to explore that. It's a new book, and it's fascinating. I heard a little bit of it, and it's really fascinating. And then we're going to talk about your brain hallucinates your conscious reality. I have this talk once in a while with Laverne. She'll bring up – Laverne is very deep in consciousness and stuff, and she'll make me think. She makes my brain go, ow, what's wrong, brain? Well, I'm listening to Laverne, brain. I'm trying to figure it out. Well, what's to figure out? It's really deep, and we just don't have that vault. We'll work on it, brain. And my brain goes, I'm trying. And so we're going to expand your consciousness if I can, because it's your brain hallucinates your conscience reality. How you like that? How you like that? Some hippie shit, right? Your brain hallucinates your conscious reality. Damn, that's deep shit. That's what we're going to be talking about today. There's a lot of things we're going to talk about. If we get to it, I want to talk about the gay mafia, what's going on. I want to talk about the deep state, what's going on. There's a lot of shit that's going on, and I want to get to it, but sometimes I don't, because we get people coming in the studio. When they come in the studio, they take the time, and I don't get there, but there's really interesting subjects that I want to talk about. I really do. It's the 10th day of Christmas, everybody. Santa's going to be coming on. Santa's going to be coming. Santa comes once a year. Yes, he does. So if you see a fat white man with blue balls coming down your chimney, that's Santa. Santa and his blue balls. He comes once a year. Hello, Santa. So that's what we're going to be doing. And when we come back, I'm going to get some coffee. Let's get right to it. The first thing we're going to get right to, you know, the news is pretty bad. Yeah, I got to stop listening to 24-hour news. Not good. I'm tired of hearing about Donald Trump. Sick and tired of that old fart. I'm tired of that fat ass. I'm tired of hearing Hunter Biden. This is why I don't, we did it for 3 years in a row. If you listen to the show every day for three years, the same people will come in the show, and they will argue what a beautiful man Donald Trump is, and then it goes nowhere. It goes nowhere. Who cares? But when it gets closer to the election, I mean, the Democrats are demonizing like this guy, and the Republicans are now going after Hunter Biden, you know, President Biden's son. I liked it better when they didn't say shit. You got a lot of Republicans who are not running anymore because there's this illusion with it. It's no longer the Republican Party. Don't think it is. It's gone. It's a Trump Party. And those Republicans who are retiring says there's no room for me. I cannot kiss the ring of the fat-ass dictator, the four-time impeached fat-ass. So they retire. He's taking over the party. Party, party, party. Nobody's going to that party. It's the worst party ever. There, I talked about politics, right? Done? All right. I might come back and keep you abreast. I like being abreast. I like the abreast. And I like the ass, too. But I like to keep you abreast of what's going on in the news. So a couple of things that I highlight. There's a lot of headlines, but a couple of things that will catch my eye that I might look at. Here we go. Let's go with this. House formalizes impeachment thing. Here's what I was talking about. Stupid people doing stupid things. That's what we talk about. It's time for stupid. And here you go. It's part of the news. It'll get you caught up. And now, the news by ABC.
Capitol Hill now, where House Republicans voted last night to approve a formal impeachment inquiry into President Biden, despite presenting no evidence of high crimes or misdemeanors, which is the constitutional standard for impeachment.
Nowadays, we can arrest you and impeach you because we have no evidence. But we're going to do it anyway because, you know what, Donald Trump wants Biden because he's a little fat. You know, that's called Trump Towers again. We like to, every time I get pissed off, I call Trump Towers. Let's do that. You know, we should call Mar-a-Lago. That's what we should call, right? Mar-a-Lago. All right, stay tuned for the show, and I'm going to call Mar-a-Lago. Yeah, see. Yeah, there you go. That's the ticket. So let's impeach somebody that there's no evidence for it. Here we go.
Despite presenting no evidence of high crimes or misdemeanors, which is the constitutional standard for impeachment, Senior White House correspondent Selena Wang has the story. Good morning, Selena.
Good morning, George. And there is still no evidence of wrongdoing by President Biden, but House Republicans say this is about strengthening their investigation, while Democrats say this is a sham intended to help his Republican rival, Donald Trump. This morning, House Republicans are pushing ahead with an impeachment inquiry into President Biden, despite finding no evidence of wrongdoing in nearly a year of investigations. The vote late yesterday falling along party lines.
The House has now spoken, and I think pretty loudly, pretty clearly, with every single Republican voting in favor of moving into this official impeachment inquiry phase.
The inquiry is focused on allegations that the president abused his power to enrich his family and whether he made decisions while vice president to boost his son Hunter's businesses.
Is there hard evidence of wrongdoing?
That's the point of an inquiry, is to ask the questions.
Hunter Biden now faces federal tax and gun charges after a plea deal reached with prosecutors fell apart over the summer. He's pleaded not guilty on the weapons charge, and his attorneys say he's paid back the money he owed in taxes. Still, he has been under scrutiny by Republicans for his work with companies in Ukraine and China. So far, there's no evidence of the president's involvement.
Would you accept a pardon from your father?
The younger Biden making a rare public appearance on Capitol Hill yesterday.
There's no evidence to support the allegations that my father was financially involved in my business because it did not happen.
But he also defied a congressional subpoena, refusing to testify in private over concerns his words behind closed doors would be manipulated. Instead, offering to testify in public.
Will he be held in contempt of Congress?
We certainly plan to do that, Chairman Jordan and I.
Right now, is there any evidence of wrongdoing on the part of President Biden?
We have some very serious concerns about some checks that Joe Biden received.
Democrats slamming the investigation.
They've been at it for 11 months. They have found nothing.
This is a ridiculous fishing expedition.
After the vote, President Biden issued a scathing statement saying House Republicans are focused on attacking him with lies instead of making American lives better. Now, some Democratic lawmakers tell me that that contrast could even help the president's reelection chances in 2024. George?
There you go. Thank you, George. That's George. I like George. I like RH reporters, too. Our major reporter is Sammy School. She's always on the job. She's on the hotspot. She investigates and she investigates the investigators. That's what she does. She travels around the world on other people's money because we kind of take it from people, almost like George Stantos. I found a number. I wonder if this is Mar-a-Lago. I'm going to make a call here. I think it is Mar-a-Lago. Shh, let's make a call. Shh, this is the first time I'm calling Mar-a-Lago. Shh, shh. Okay, here we go. It failed. Just like Trump. Let's try it again. Oh, I know why it's failing. Okay, wait. Let's try this again. Okay, hold on. Doesn't it sound weird when I whisper? It's either creepy or sexy. You determine. Flip coin. Hold on. Okay, here we go.
This call is being recorded.
Yay. Being recorded. Being recorded. It's being recorded. I wonder if I get the tape. Don't they pick up the phone in Mar-a-Lago?
Thank you for calling Mar-a-Lago. This is Monique speaking.
Hello, Monique. Hi, my name is Dan. They call me Dan the Man. I'd like to make a donation. Is this the Mar-a-Lago where Donald Trump can take donations? Because I'd like to make a donation to the Republican Party or to Donald Trump.
Sure. I can take your details and give it to one of your staff members, and they will call you back.
They call me back?
So yes, they will call you back for donation, because Mar-a-Lago doesn't take donations ourselves. We can just forward it to one of your staff members for the campaign.
Oh, they don't. Does that go to the Republican campaign, or does it go into Donald Trump's pocket? I don't understand. I don't want to donate to the GOP. I want this go directly to the leader, Donald Trump. I want to make sure it goes right there. What we do is we have a foundation for Republicans, young Republicans of America, and we don't want it to go to the GOP. We want it to go to dear leader, Donald Trump. So
okay.
Is it going to be a GOP thing, or is it going to go to Donald Trump?
Well, we are not Trump organization, so all I can do is put you in contact with one of his staff members.
Oh, you're not the Trump organization?
I won't be able to give you that. No.
Oh, but isn't this the Mar-a-Lago where Trump's estate is and where he lives?
Yes, but it's just a hotel. It's not Trump organization.
Oh, this is the – oh, so – oh, well, we're going to be in Florida. What are your rates? That's great.
It's fine.
So
only for members.
Well, how do I become a member? Because I'm donating a lot of money.
I know. You have to be referred by one of our members because it's private.
I have to what? I'm sorry?
You have to be referred by one of our members.
Oh, okay. Okay, so that means invited to a party or whatever. I mean, it would be so great to be a member of a person who betrayed our country and is a traitor and a fraud, because that's what we do.
Well, so I'm pretty sure you don't want to donate, so you're just wasting my time and you're wasting your own time.
No, I want to talk to dear leader who's a traitor to our country and who's a fraud, and I want to donate, and I just stay at the hotel. Hello? Hello? How rude. You hung up on me? How rude of you. You're so rude. Mm-mm-mm. So rude. All right, everybody, we'll be right back with the show. I'm going to get some coffee. I am Brian Hammer Jackson. There's some special people. A lot of people are special. I come on the show. There's one person who is very controversial, has a lot of courage, came on the show, took the slings and arrows from me, went through, put herself into a forum where people, there's no filter, because that's what happens when you come on this show. No filter at all. Well, her name is Tori. And what's special about Tori, Tori Clay. What's special about Tori is Tori's a transgender. She's a transgender, and she's a friend of the show. And I invited Tori on this show. She might be listening. And if you are, Tori, I'm gonna. My heart goes to you, and happy holidays, sweetheart. And I don't know if Tori wants me to read this or not, but, you know, and the only reason I might read it is because, you know, we don't realize how lucky we are just to be alive, you know, or just to function, that we take everyday shit for granted. I shouldn't have said the name, damn it. But sometimes... And the reason I will read this is because sometimes who we are, our choices that we make, has consequences. And, you know, people, you hear me joke on a show about gays and this. I joke about everybody. I joke about everybody. But when it comes down to it, you know, people are people. And people don't represent. I do not represent radio people. I don't. I don't represent black people. I don't. There are great black people, wonderful black people, gorgeous black people, successful black people, and I wish I could be, you know, representing that. I represent me. I happen to be black, and I happen to have a gorgeous ass. But sometimes So she doesn't represent all transgender. She happens to be one. You get what I'm saying? You get what I'm saying? So I invited Tori on the show. And the reason I'm going to say her name, if you see her on my Facebook or you see her anywhere, and she may be in the author's area, give her some love. Really, I'm serious. Give her some love. Invite her on the show. This is what I got. Hey, hun. That's me. I'm hun. Some people call me hun. Some people call me honey. Some people call me motherfucker. I prefer hun. hey, hon, thanks so much for thinking of me, and I love you to pieces for this message. I sent her a great message. I have not had a great year. I've been in a depression, and I would be a depressing guess. I had three heart surgeries, man. And I had COVID bad. I also had a thing happen that caused me to lose my storage unit. I don't know if I should. You know, it's the season. I'm doing this not as a bit or anything. I'm doing this that, you know, some people need love and some people need help. I mean, if you want to donate to some campaign dude who is getting impeached and keeps getting in trouble and he's being fraud and he knows that he can say shit because you keep giving him his money and he spends it like crazy to pay for his lawyers, maybe this is a person, man, who needs help. She didn't ask me for help. She was just telling me what's going on with her. And I feel a little bad, you know, reading it, but also I feel good that maybe long ago when we did good on this show, we used to do good. We used to be the good guys on this show long ago. And people used to come to us for help and everything. And I remember this one story. I can't remember the year, but it was a big blackout in New York City. This guy was doing a fundraising thing. He wanted to do his film. And he was, he called in the show. And he asked, Brian, I all my life, you hear the story, all my life I want to do this. I'm 8 grand from my goal. And if I don't get 8 grand, I lose it all. Because he was on that platform. Please help me, Brian. I don't know this guy from Adam. And he's calling. You can hear the stuff. And he would call every 5 minutes because there was no electricity at his home. There was no electricity. The storm was coming down. It was just it was a mess. He would hang up, and then he would drive to another mile or two really quick. So where there's some phone there. He was on a cell phone. We did have cell phone, but there was no signal going on, so he had to go borrow a phone. He would call in and go, okay, Brian, I'm sorry, I'm going to get 2 minutes. I borrowed this guy's phone and blah, blah, whatever. And people started donating. So when he called in, he goes, what is it, Brian? What is it? I said, we are up. We got 2,000, and we would give him an update. Okay. And then he goes, it got to a point where it's 20 minutes. He only had 20 minutes left. Or the campaign was going to, and it was no scam because I'm looking at the campaign. I see the countdown. Brian, we need 6,000. I go, fuck. He goes, I can't call back or anything, and I'm afraid. Blah 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 blah. That was his last call, right? I said, okay. I'm seeing it tick down, and I say, okay, damn, we're at 2 minutes. And if this guy doesn't make this amount of money, he loses everything. I'm going, damn, we had like a full studio. They're rooting for the guy. Come on, dude. I mean, we had like 10, 15. Come on. And it got down to, we're counting down to 1 minute. And, you know, the studio's going, oh, no. It's a poor dude, man. The dude was a nice dude. And we're going, shit, we're not going to make it. Brian, do something. I go, what do you want me to do? I'm doing everything. Go live. I am live. Blah, blah, blah. It got to about 45 seconds. Guy's gone. No more communication with him. The weather was bad. New York, we couldn't get through. Blah, blah, blah. We held our heads. Hey, I'm giving the pep talk. Hey, man, we tried. Within 45 seconds, I get a call. Some dude donated $10,000. 10 grand. $10,000 to this guy. And we didn't hear from him for 3 days. We didn't know if it went through. We didn't know it went through or anything like that. So he calls me 3 days later and basically crying and thanking everybody and everything. Just thanking everybody. Just unbelievable. We did it. We raised, in that 2 hours, we raised about, and we counted it because people were donating, we raised about $12,000 when I was on the air. I felt like Jerry Lewis without the kids falling over, you know. And the reason we stopped, so then the scam artist decided, like, Brian had a heart, right? So they would call, and the reason we stopped is it was one fucker who called. Blah, 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 you know, we're on the roll. We were counting how successful we were. We were one out of one. We got to a point where we were 10 out of 11. Now, the reason we lost one was it was a big actress. I'll give you a hint. She starred in The Terminator. We were friends. She called. She was raising money for her film. And it was my fault. She says, she goes, Brian, I want to raise $5,000, $6,000. I go, let's go 10 grand. You know, here I'm full of this. She goes, really, Brian? I go, yeah. Well, she asked for originally $5,000. We got her to $7,000. I said, we lost because we wanted $10,000. But in her way, we were successful. I wanted 10, but she got 7, but she asked for 4. Kind of a win. We did this 11 times. Everything was successful, raising money on the air. Until this one motherfucker comes on the air, gives me a heart story. And I knew at that time some of my staff really needed money, right? Because we weren't charging for this. We weren't taking percentage out on this. I mean, even your sources will take a percentage out of it. We didn't. We're on the air. So he says he'd been hearing the show. Hey, Brian, I need to raise $8,000. I'm doing a book deal and whatever, and I need $8,000. Can we do it? I heard on the show you do it. I heard you're successful. We were 10 out of 11, but let's count. We were perfect. 11 times we have done it, 11 times we were successful. And so he gave me this sad story, right? I said, I'll tell you what. I'll help you raise the money, but you got to give 5, 10% to our charity. And we did have a charity at that time. It was neurofibromatosis. We did have a charity at that point. And he goes, well, I don't know if I want to do that. I go, what? Well, I don't know. I said, dude, I'm trying to raise money for you and for us, for me raising money for you, dude. I want 5 to 10% to go to our charity. I don't know. Let me talk to my owner. And then he comes back and goes, I don't know. That's going to be hard, Brian. I said, fuck you. Go. I said, can you imagine? You wanted to come on my air to raise all this money, and you wouldn't even give 5 to 10% to our charity? This is the money I'm raising for you. It's not like you're losing any money. And I said, fuck it. We'll never do it again. And we haven't done it. We haven't done it again in 8 years, 9 years. We haven't done that. So this person, just a minute, the doorbell's, hold on. Just the doorbell. Hold on 1 second.
Yes, sir, honey. It happened on one of them zippity-doo-dah days. Now, that's the kind of day when you can't open your mouth without a song jump right out of it, zippity-doo-dah, zippity-ay. My, oh, my, what a wonderful day. Plenty of sunshine heading my way. Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-ay. Mr. Bluebird's on my shoulder. It's the truth. It's actual. Everything is satisfactual. Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-ay. Wonderful feeling, wonderful day. Yes, sir. Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-ay. My, oh, my, what a wonderful day.
Oh, plenty of sunshine in the wind.
Mr. Bluebird's on my shoulder. It's the truth, it's actual. Everything is satisfied.
back so zippity-doo-dah, zippity-ay. Wonderful feeling, feeling this way.
Yeah, Mr. Bluebird. So let me finish my story. So when I hear Tori, and I read it again, if you have even have half a heart, and again, I did not ask her to tell me this. This is not a pledge. She's not asking me any money. But to hear a person go through this, I have not had a great year. I'd be a depressing guess. I had 3 heart surgeries, and I had COVID bad. I also had a thing happen that caused me to lose my storage unit and thus have boxes and boxes of my possessions on my lawn. Now, what I didn't give away is safe inside my home, but it makes my home hard to live in. I wonder if she's homeless. And I hurt myself with all that lifting and carrying. I have been in the throes of depression. My bright spot, it's been about a year since I rescued a cat, and she keeps me company. On a whim, I decided to count my guitars, and I found 117 guitars. That's just pure addiction. I have to start selling some, and I already did. The only thing I have going on in entertainment is my film festival, but we already played for the year. I'm still lonely and alone, except for Lily, my cat. I assume that my life update disqualifies me from being a desirable guest on your show. So that's enough about me. I'd like to hear what you've been up to, and I hope you've been doing well. Happy holiday to you and yours, Tori. And that's Tori's going through some shit. So if you see Tori on Facebook and she's around, she's a pretty girl, pretty lady, buy a guitar, man. You know what? I always want a guitar anyway. Buy a guitar. Everybody loves to play. Buy a guitar, especially if you have a teenage boy. He'd get him into music, he'll get laid in a minute. Get him a guitar. Or just send Tori some love. Or just send her a card and say, hey, thank you. Maybe that's it. I know I lost my magic about, raising money. I lost my magic about, crowdsourcing. I have none left. I feel like there's a little Christmas show where, I don't know if it's Rudolph the Reindeer or whatever, or Frosty the Snowman, where there's a wizard and he lost his magic and he only had a little left. That's what I feel. But if you see Tori Clay, why don't you say hello to her? Or just wish her a happy holiday. It means a lot. Thank you for listening. Going back to the news, there's a lot of things going on, but I will pick. This is your main fear. If you're if you have kids going to college, this is your main fear about they're abducting people from college. There's a new charge for women accused of posting as a student. What is this scam? My computer is acting the fool, so it's not doing what it should be doing. Here we go. Here's the story. Police issues warning after string. And it's not even playing on my shit. Not playing. String of attempted abductions on campus. Wow. I wonder why it's not playing. Why is it not playing? Oh, there it is. Hold on. Shit. Let me see. I tried this way. Okay, here we go. So if that's your worst nightmare, if you're a parent, can you imagine you're a parent and there's a rapist on campus? Police issue warning after a string of attempted abductions on campus. A string. It almost smells of sex trafficking here. Well, according to ABC News, and we're going to get the story right now, this is what's happening. Maybe the camp is one of the people you guys are involved in. Here we go.
To Capitol Hill now, where House Republicans voted last night to approve a formal impeachment inquiry into President Biden, despite presenting no evidence of high crimes or misdemeanors, which is the constitutional standard for impeachment. Senior White House correspondent Selena Wang has the story. Good morning, Selena.
Good morning, George. And there is still no evidence of wrongdoing by President Biden, but House Republicans say this is about...
All right, you bastards. You went fishing and you caught me, you dirty bastards. Let me see if I can... I'm going to go through the back door. I'm good at that. Let's try this again. See if I can go through the back door. I hate it when AB...
...an urgent warning from police after a string of attempted kidnappings near the University of Arizona, all involving women college students in just the past week. Rhiannon Alley is tracking this for us. Good morning, Rhiannon.
Good morning, Robin. Yeah, this is really scary. As students are getting ready for their winter break, they should be celebrating, having fun. But it's hard for students at one university in Arizona to let loose when their sense of security is being threatened after three attempted abductions in less than a week.
Wow.
This morning, an urgent investigation underway after a terrifying string of attempted abductions of college women.
The Tucson Police Department has dedicated patrol, investigative, and forensic personnel who are working tirelessly to identify and arrest the suspect or suspects involved in these incidents.
Tucson police saying in less than a week, there have been three attempted abductions of students at the University of Arizona, each attempt within a mile of campus, and every incident similar, a man following the women in his car. One victim was attacked from behind, screaming before the suspect fled. A second woman reported being followed by a car. The third woman groped but was able to get away.
Wow.
Police are now searching for the suspect, described as driving a four-door dark blue vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
5'10 to 6 foot tall.
Now you can kick his ass.
Medium to heavy set build with close buzz cut hair.
University students are now on edge.
If I'm not with, like, at least two other people walking around at night, like, I won't be around by myself.
And until they catch this guy, that's exactly what campus police are advising students to do, to travel in groups, not alone. They also say they will have increased patrols, and the FBI has now joined this investigation. Michael, hopefully this puts students a little more at ease.
Right.
We sure hope so, Rhiannon. Thank you.
Right on. The trial of actor Jonathan Majors.
The trial of actor Jonathan Majors for allegedly assaulting his ex-girlfriend.
What?
The defense is rested and the judge has allowed the evidence, including video, audio, text, and photos, to be released.
Wow.
Aaron Katursky has the details for us. Good morning, Aaron.
Michael, good morning to you from here in court. Jonathan Majors, with roles in Ant-Man and the Wasp and Loki and Creed 3, was on the cusp of superstardom. Now he's on trial here for misdemeanor assault and harassment, and the jury is about to get the case.
What's his name?
This morning, Jonathan Majors returns to court as the jury prepares to decide a domestic violence case that could determine the trajectory of the actor's career.
What happened exactly, do you know?
No, I don't know. But she went conscious.
Majors called 911 back in March.
I think I saw
After he found his ex-girlfriend, Grace Jabari, on a closet floor in their apartment. The jury saw video from police body-worn cameras.
Wow.
Jabari did have a cut behind her ear. The jury saw this picture of it. The jury also saw a photo of Jabari's finger that she testified Majors fractured during an assault in the back seat of an SUV.
Uh-oh.
My head was resting on his shoulder, Jabari told the jury.
Mm.
We were chatting, and he was scrolling on his phone when a message popped up saying, I wish I was kissing you. Upset by the message, Jabari testified she grabbed the phone, and then I felt a heavy thud on top of me, what I knew to be the weight of him on top of me and him trying to pry the phone out of my fingers.
Wow.
Surveillance video shows Majors hoisting Jabari off the ground and shoving her back in the car before he's seen running off. She chases after him.
Wow.
He pushes her away and runs off, Jabari crossing traffic in pursuit.
What?
Jonathan Majors' case is going to hinge on two major components. One, will you believe that Grace Jabari was injured by Jonathan Majors from all the video and the testimony that we saw and heard? And two, was Jonathan Majors justified in his actions after Grace Jabari admittedly took his property,
that's right,
that being his cell phone, and he tried to recover it from her.
Major's career had been taking off when the Marvel star and Jabari met on the set of Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, and began dating.
Scarlett.
Before the alleged assault, she testified he had mood swings and a temper, the jury seeing text messages purporting to show Majors dissuading Jabari from going to the hospital following an alleged altercation between them in 2022. The jury also hearing this recording of the actor scolding Jabari.
How dare you come home drunk and disturb the peace of our house?
What? And telling her he needs a great woman because he's a great man.
That's right. Miranda
Scott King. Do you know who that is? That's Martin Luther King's wife. Michelle Obama.
Oh, there's some coke.
Barack Obama's wife. My temper, my travel, blah, all that said, I'm a great man.
Yes.
A great man.
Yes.
I am doing great things. Not just for me, but for my culture, it's for the world.
You're a great
man.
That
is actually the position I'm in.
Yep.
The woman that supports me needs to be a great woman.
You're damn right, bitch.
Majors did not testify in his own defense, but his attorneys cast him as the victim of Grace Jabari.
He is a victim. That's enough that I need to hear. These women, man, I am telling you, bitch has to be in jail. It's time to throw the bitch in jail. Oh, sometimes I just think about myself. Let me open up the phone right here. Melissa, good morning, sweetheart.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I'm listening to the news.
Are we all alone again?
Huh?
Are we all alone?
No, we have people. I just wanted to have a little me time. Oh, I like it when, oh, no, I'm on alone with you. We're alone again. This is a butt dial. I'm going to leave now.
Yeah.
Oh, did you hear my live call? I called Mar-a-Lago.
Sort of, at the end.
Yeah.
At the end.
Yeah.
Which Tori are you talking about?
Tori Clay, the transgender, who was on the show. You remember Tori?
Yeah, looking for money for an apartment?
She wasn't looking for money. She was just telling me what was happening with her. She wasn't asking for money. She was just telling me that she's having a hard time. And that I'm saying that back in the day, we used to raise a lot of money for people. And I'm saying Tori Clay is a good person. She's a transgender. She's a good woman. She fell in some bad times during the holiday. She doesn't represent all transgender, like I don't represent all radio shows. I do represent amazing men. Like that guy, that tape, I'm a great man, and I do great things, and I deserve great stuff. That being said... So if you see Tori, if she's on your Facebook or whatever, sometimes.
No.
Yeah. Just, okay. So I'm just saying people see her. Just wish her a happy holiday. She's going through something rough.
Happy holidays.
I know, right?
Yeah.
And happy holidays to you, Mr. Pastor Don Jr., CEO. And happy holidays to you, Melissa.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Happy holidays.
You're like the... How you doing, sir? Melissa's like the angel in our tree. We put a stick up her ass, and she smiles and glows.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Exactly.
I know.
You
She's
know
such
me.
An angel. I do know you, Miss Emmy School. Miss Melissa, no, she's a sweetheart. Mr. Pastor Don Jr., CEO with the winning team. How you doing, sir? Are you having a happy holiday at this time?
Man, I am, brother. I am, man. I was just getting the show. I'm texting people, telling them to come on, man. I got to give you support and props, and I want you to look forward to 24. It's going to be a year of blessings and success.
Right.
So we're going to keep it going, man. Come on.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. And you know what? I just enjoy you. If they want to come on and promote, that's true. But I enjoy you as a guest and look forward to you. Thank you, Mr. Pastor Don Jr., CEO. Thank you. Like I said, I put up a mistletoe the other day. It was funny. We have a store called Kroger's. It was a store called, I don't know if you guys have a store called Kroger. So I'm shopping, I do. And there's like the florist in the store. And so there is a lady who bags for me all the time. Hi, Mr. Jack. You know, you ever see the women who say hi and they move their whole body when they just say hi and their head moves and their hips move and their whole body, hi. If they have a complete sentence, you think they're going to go into a cardiac arrest. But hi, Mr. Jackson. And I keep thinking that song, sorry, Mrs. Jackson. Woo. You know, but anyway. I go, hi. She goes, where's your wife? I go, my wife's at home, but my girlfriend's in the car. Oh, you're so silly. Okay. Well, okay, I'm going to go now. She goes, and I go, you got a florist thing now? She goes, yes, we do. I go, hey, look, there's a mistletoe. She goes, yes. I go, how old are you? She goes, I'm 19. I go, uh-uh. No mistletoe's going to give me life in prison. I'm out of here. I know where those trips are. Hell if I know. Uh-uh, I'm not going there. So I'm saying please do not kiss under the mistletoe if you don't know their age. You could be really upsetting. I defer to Miss Melissa. Melissa, is there such a thing as a mistletoe? Is it a thing? I know we call it a mistletoe, but why do they call
it's
it a
like
mistletoe?
It's a leaf.
It's a leaf. And how do they get the kissing thing underneath it?
I don't know. There's got to be some kind of. Wait a minute. I can look it up for you.
You just look beautiful the way you are, and I'll do all the handiwork, lady. Okay.
It is kind of weird, isn't it?
Yeah, I kind of wonder how things get started. Because people don't, you know, I'm one of these inquired minds, like, things that make you go, hmm.
Why?
Here's the history.
Under the mistletoe. There you go.
There you go.
It's seen as a symbol of fertility and life, and this could be why we kiss underneath it. In winter, when all the trees are bare and many plants have died away, mistletoe stays green, and you can see it growing around tree branches quite happily.
Wow. Wow. So it's a fertility. Wow. Thank you, Melissa. That's our
You're
Savvy
welcome.
School on the job. There you go. She's the best.
Yeah.
You know, we have the pastor here, so it's going to be good, because I'm going to say something that I should not say. And I have Melissa here because she's empathetic about people.
Most
but it really pisses me. Well, the title of the show is Some People Need Killing.
Oh.
And your brain hallucinates your... I always like it when you get shocked. I got to go. Some people need killing. And then the second part is your brain hallucinates your conscious reality. The second one, oh, my God, is very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talk about my reality, your reality. Maybe my reality is not the same as your reality, and our brain, our conscience. So we're going to get into that, too. So that would be interesting. But some people need killing, and I will hear these horrific stories. I would hear stories of a man comes in the house, and he breaks, and he rapes a five-year-old, or he kills him, and all this stuff. And then I hear it on the news all the time. But, you know, and I might be racist. I might be racist. It's going to be a racist comment. You can't say anything without being a racist nowadays. I'm just going to say it. But most of it is black people. They'll have a microphone. They go, you know, your son just had a bullet in his head, and they dragged his body through the street. Do you have anything to say? I just pray for the boy. I pray that he find God, and I have to forgive him. Meanwhile, her son's arm is on one block, and his head's on the third block, and his teeth is on another block, you know, because they're picking up pieces of her son. And you would still hear her going, I just pray for his soul, and I hope that he finds God, and that he turns himself in, and that I forgive him. I'll be sitting there eating something. And that particular scenario did not happen, but there are similar scenarios that did happen that I actually saw on TV. And I'd be eating there and going, you stupid bitch. You stupid bitch. I will hunt the motherfucker down. I wish they interview me. There's going to be no forgiveness. There'll be no forgiveness. I could not do it. I could not forgive somebody who trespasses on my passes. Said in the Bible, the people who trespass on your trust, forgive the people who trespass, I think it was. No, if you trespass, I'm going to shoot you in the ass. And they go, well, Jesus will forgive. I passed her. I mean, you know.
Wow.
But I'm not Jesus, and Jesus was a great man. I'm far from Jesus, so I'm going to shoot you in the ass. Sorry. And I can't. So there are certain things that I can't forgive, especially if it happens to my family or something like this. If you hurt my kid or you hurt my girlfriend or wife, I'm coming after you. I had to. And it says, and then the people go, well, that's not going to bring them back. Well, it's not, but I'm going to send them to hell, and they can explain it to the devil, or I will kill them, and then they can apologize to the person who they killed in person. I don't have that forgiveness gene. I'm not that good. Some people I think deserve to be killed, or these people who do these sex traffickings of little girls. I say sex trafficking of anybody against anybody's will. I mean, you take their spirit away, I think we should take your spirit away. There are certain things that you don't forgive. And you don't have to mention it, Melissa, but are there certain things you just can't forgive? You don't have to mention the things, but are there certain things that you can say, I pray to God that his soul becomes cleansed and I forgive him? Is there a limit to that, or you feel the same way? Because if I forgive him, I can let the pain go away. And it's the stupidest thing about men. I'm going to tell you something, you stupid men, and you fall for it all the time. Let's say you cheat, right? You cheat. You do something bad. Like, say, most of it is cheating. Okay, let's say Brian, they see Brian sneaking out the window, and, you know, they know it's me. Because I'm talking to the woman as I sneak out the window. All right, I'll call you Friday, right? Brian, leave. My husband's coming out. What's his name? Brian, get the hell out. You know it's me. My girlfriend sees me running down the street with my drawers, pulling up my drawers and everything. She actually sees me running down the street. But then she doesn't really know it's me. It looks like me, but it doesn't. She's not sure. And then my friends go, you know what? You should confess to the woman, and it'll make you feel better. And some fools actually believe that. Honey, I have a confession to make. You know, Shanika, you know, right over there. Oh, yeah, I know her. I see her at church. Yeah, I hit that. You what? I hit. And then, so me confessing to her is just going to make her feel angry. It's going to make her want to hurt me. How am I going to feel better about that? So what you do is keep your shit quiet. Don't say anything. I'm not condoning cheating, by the way. I'm just saying I don't think confession is good for the soul unless you're in the Catholic religion and you're not a little boy talking to a priest. Because those priests get horny. Tommy, did you come? What sins did you do? Father, I have sinned. Well, Tommy, you're six. Yes, Father, but I have sinned. What did you do? I stole the cookie. Well, why don't you come on over here and I'll bust your cookie for you, little Tommy. Oh, Father, you say this every week. Oh, no. Next thing you know, Tommy's following. You know, it scares me every time I talk about religion. Things happen. My show shut down the other day. So I go back to the question. I go, Melissa, is there anything that stops you from forgiving somebody for what they have done, taken from you? Anything? Or is it still across the board that you just forgive everybody because that's how it is? Because it makes you feel better.
I think we get taught forgiveness is something that's really quick, and it's
right.
Not. It's a process. It's a process. You don't just, I forgive you. It doesn't work that way.
No.
You know what I mean?
Nope,
we have to feel and go through things, and right? It's
right.
Not. When people say that so quickly, it's just like, nah.
I know. They want to be a good person. They are human, and they hurt. And I don't like it when I hear it. Oh, well, I have to forgive him because that's what God wants me to do. I don't know if God wants you to do that. Well, it's up to the Lord. Let him decide. Well, either way, Lord's going to decide whether you hit him or not. I'm just not that good.
Isn't it weird, though, that we get taught, what did God say? Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. You know, that kind of stuff.
Right.
I mean, he can have it.
Right. I got the T-shirt. Thank you, Lord.
Do you know what? It's like,
yeah.
Yeah. Why?
I hear what
God?
You're saying.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
True. If you
we're
know,
human.
Yes, we are. We are. And I was going to do a story. This guy's a magnificent guy. Obama liked him. And this guy's a spiritual guy. And it was a different thing. And he was talking about our God, your God, my God, false God.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get his name. And he was so interested. So I got the other guy. But I want this other guy. He talked about God. And my God might be different from your God and so on and so forth. And I think my God is. So when people say to me, Brian, are you religious? And I'm sorry, Pastor. I have to just talk who I am. And I said, yes, I believe in God. I believe in God. I do. But I have to say, I probably don't believe in your God.
Right.
And one guy had a conversation. I actually had a conversation with a person. And he goes, well, what do you mean you don't believe in my God? I said, probably I don't believe in your God. And he said, what do you mean? Well, I have questions about the Bible. He goes, oh, I see. I have questions about a white man up in the clouds, and he knows all, sees all, everything that goes on in the world, he knows. And can you imagine his ears? That poor guy, everybody's praying to him. Millions of people were praying to him every second of a second. I mean, how do you answer all those prayers at the same time? Can you imagine some guy up there going, oh, my God, his inner ear, and people are praying to him all over the world. How do you choose? And when I see a sporting event and I'll see a guy going, we just won the Super Bowl, first I want to thank God. I said, really? You got people in Israel and everything praying, oh, please, Lord, save my son. Oh, he didn't lie. And this guy's praying to win a game. Hey, Lord, you remember me? Can you pray that we win the game? You think really, so God doesn't like the other team? Is that what you're saying? Or how about the guy who wins the award? I want to thank you for my Golden Globe Awards. I'm going to praise God. Really? Really? God wanted you to win? So God didn't want the other people to win at all, even though they're more, you know, the first one, you know, you're competing with Father So-and-So with his documentary. So God doesn't want Father So-and-So to win, but he wanted you to win. I want to thank you. I used to do that. Thank you, Lord, for I did not get syphilis or gonorrhea from this bitch. I used to do that. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, God, that I don't have any bumps on my penises. And God was there. Please, okay, Brian, I'm going to keep you safe right now, but don't do this again. Thank you, Lord. Sure enough, hey, Lord, I did it again. But it says in the Bible, you forgive me? Brian, oh, hey, Lord, I will watch it and put a condom on it. Thank you. Can you imagine that, though? In the whole world, people are praying every day, every moment, every second, and the voices that he must hear. We don't think about that, do we? What does he do? Can you imagine that? Well, anyway, something food for thought. So does God, I don't know. Well, anyway, let's go back to this. Some people need killing. This is a book. Some people need killing. And it's by, is it Evangelista? She recounts her investigation into the campaign of extrajudicial murders under former President Rodrigo Duarte. Now, Rodrigo, I think he was the president of the Philippines, if I remember right. This guy was a brutal son of a bitch. He sought after drug dealers, and he wanted to kill them. They don't deserve to live, and he has killed thousands of people. Even if he suspected you're a drug dealer, he would kill you. He thinks you should die. This woman wrote the book. Her name is, like I said, Patricia Evangelista. The book is called Some People Need Killing. This is my author of the month. And she made the New York Times bestseller. In fact, the book review says that she's a journalistic masterpiece. And it's about a nation careening into violent autocracy. It's a word. But it's told through the stories of the Philippines. It was a state-sanctioned killings of its citizen. From a reporter on the international renown. Here are some more reviews. Tragic, elegant, vital. Evangelista risked her own life to tell this story. That's under the New York Times bestseller. One of the New York Times book reviews, the best book of the year. A best book of the year, the New York Times. Here's a little bit of it. Here's a soundbite of it. I haven't heard it. I'm hearing it with you the first time. Here we go.
Your velocity required its own nomenclature. There were drug-related deaths. They were illegal killings. They were targeted assassinations. Salvagings, body dumps, drive-by shootings. They were casualties in the Duterte administration's war on crime. Or, as the news network ABS-CBN would put it, those who perished. Even Philippine officials seemed unable to agree on the terminology. One senator called them summary killings. The Interior Secretary called them alleged vigilante-style killings of drug personalities. There is language for this phenomenon. The term is extrajudicial killings. It was a single phrase that became commonplace on the street and on television. So common that a Senate resolution called for sessions investigating the recent rampant extrajudicial killings and summary executions of criminals. The repetition forced a shorthand, EJK. The press used it as a qualifier. The victims' families used it as a verb. The critics used it as an accusation. From the beginning of the Duterte era, recording these deaths became my job. As a field correspondent for Rappler in Manila, I was one of the reporters covering the results of the president's pledge to destroy anyone without charge or trial whom he or the police or any of a number of vigilantes suspected of taking or selling drugs. The volume of Duterte's dead was at times overwhelming, as was covering the powerful in a country where the powerful refused to be held to account. I ran away halfway through the war. At the time, I was investigating a series of killings in the capital. It was slow work. I hunted down witnesses. I culled official reports. I met men who detailed the precise manner in which they killed their own neighbors on orders from above, then sent interview requests to the police officers they accused. Rappler decided my presence in Manila was a security risk. I agreed. It was safer to assume that the self-interest preventing vigilantes from shooting me on sight was unlikely to hold. My editor delayed publication until my plane lifted off the tarmac. All this was why I found myself crossing the Pacific in early October 2018. If the good people of the Logan Nonfiction Fellowship believed I could produce literature, I was happy to pretend I could. The residency was 3 months long at a wooded estate in upstate New York. It should have come as a relief, but years of covering a state-sanctioned massacre does odd things to the mind. I had learned to qualify every statement and to burn transcripts on my balcony. I had lain awake nights convinced that a misplaced comma would be grounds for criminal libel. For someone with my sort of obsessive imagination, the practical caution required of a drug war reporter morphed into an almost paralyzing paranoia. Nothing was certain. Everyone was lying. The man with the selfie stick was a spy for the cops, or a killer, or a fanatical supporter of the president likely to upload my photo of meeting a source onto Twitter. The fact that I was occasionally correct fueled the lunacy. Many things were suspect. White vans, flashing lights, spam emails, men on motorcycles, automated credit card transactions, the waiter at the coffee shop, the hotel clerk asking for my billing address, a ringing phone, a dropped call, the doorbell. I read and reread my own stories, hunting for gaps, agonizing over sentence construction, convinced I had missed the error that would get a witness killed. By the time I stood at JFK Airport, blank disembarkation form in hand, I couldn't trust my memory to write out my own name. I verified the spelling against my passport. I remember distinctly the compulsion to find a second source, and found it in my birth certificate. The Albany countryside was a pretty place, even if a pack of cigarettes did cost $13 a pop.
What?
It was cold. People were warm. There was chocolate mousse for dessert, sometimes berries. I spent most of the first weeks trying to disappear into a fog of Star Trek and Agatha Christie, but the residency required I make an honest attempt at producing a book proposal. I did. I wrote about who I was and where I came from and what it was like to stand over a corpse at 2 a.m. I signed with a publisher at the end.
There you go. She had me at chocolate mousse. Chocolate mousse. Chocolately. I don't know why they call it mousse, but it's really chocolately. A lot of chocolate in that mousse. So there you go. She says her job is to go to places where people die. That's her job.
You know, I don't like audiobooks. I don't know why.
Because it's probably you have a very strong imagination, and I think you and I
do.
So we read an article or something. The voice does not fit what we're probably thinking the story should be. I don't know.
I've tried them, and they just I don't know.
I know. They don't
do anything for me.
Well, Hearst told the story. Yeah, Hearst told the story. I had to step out, so I don't know what she talked about. I don't want to read what she said, but...
not much.
That's how it was. It was a war.
No, it was not much.
It was a war on drugs. And Duarte, who was a president at the time in the Philippines, I remember him. He used to kill them. Which made the drugs get more expensive because you're... You know, it's like, you can't, what are you going to do? You're going to kill the drug lord, so therefore, what about the people who are already addicted to it?
Well, they're
like,
already
going, okay,
they're dying anyway.
Yeah, I know.
In this country, I mean, I don't know about how it was there, but they're already dying in droves.
Well,
we had a case. Now, get this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was in New Hampshire just recently. They had two nurses. We went into surgeries that were going to happen. And one of them was a surgery that had, they used fentanyl. She removed the fentanyl and put saline. Took it.
Really?
And then there was another nurse, that took fentanyl out of a patient who was in ICU, obviously either dying or in an amazing amount of pain, and replaced that with saline.
Why?
Can you imagine? Because they wanted the fentanyl.
And what was saline?
Can you imagine?
No, I can't.
Saline is just salt, water.
It is. And
can you imagine the people that didn't get their anesthesia administered correctly?
I know.
Can you imagine? I mean, it's going on all over the place.
Was this a nurse?
These are nurses. There were, two nurses. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
They caught their asses, right?
They did. But still, the people that were in that position.
All the time. You know, I used to, way back in the day, my first girlfriend was, she was one of those idiot savants. She was an idiot. So when I graduated high school, she didn't want to be in the school. So at 16 and a half, 17, she took a GED to graduate early. She didn't get out of school, 17, 18, and she went into healthcare, respiratory therapists.
Mm-hmm.
And I started knowing the change in her. And the respiratory therapists, they would have only one or two on duty at the whole hospital. Mm-hmm. She, again, 17, 18, she was doing that, really proud of her. One day she started acting weird, really kooky weird. And she says, oh, I got to get to work early. I go, why? Because I got to get into the, I guess it was a medicine cabinet or whatever. And they were taking pills.
Yeah.
They're taking pills.
Yeah.
And then the excuse was, well, we have all night. We got to be, shut up. That's your shift. You know what I'm saying? And they were taking pills.
Yeah.
Now, lately you hear everybody has to be accountable for every pill and blah, 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 blah. Okay, fine. But you are privy. There, I heard stories, like you said, that they're holding back some pain medication and they take it or they give it to a friend, you know?
Yeah.
I think they did that to me when I was in the hospital because I was in a lot of pain and they just go, bye-bye. See, well, I know it was a Tic Tac and they said it was codeine.
Oh, God.
I'm kidding. But it goes on all the time.
It does, but this is what I'm saying about drugs, that people are so addicted.
But Melissa, it's hard, right? I mean, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, marijuana was on the illegal source list, you know, from federal. And to the federal government, it still is. It's still considered illegal.
Mm-hmm.
But then we're up there. I mean, Coke used to be in Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
Remember? So, I think I loosened my thing. I mean, they're giving us shit in the hospital that people are going in the street and our insurance is paying for it. But, you know, I don't know if there's any pure drugs or am I getting a little fentanyl. I know when I go to sleep, I'm getting propofol. And Michael Jackson died of it. It was a beautiful. Oh, propofol was so nice, man. Oh, it is so beautiful. Mwah! I kissed the sky for propofol.
How do you remember taking it? How do you remember?
Because they told me. They told me.
Yeah, but you don't remember when you put under.
I don't. But I know when I woke up. I know when I woke up, it was the best sleep I got. I woke up and I stretched my arms out like I slept in my own bed. It's like, oh, where am I? Well, Mr. Jackson, you know, your surgery went okay, and we want you to lay down and everything, and just rest here for a little bit, and you can go. I go, oh, what a good night's sleep. Oh, yeah. I go, can you wake me up in 15 minutes? Sure.
You don't remember waking up like it just was like a two-second sleep? You didn't wake up like that?
I don't even remember I was asleep, but it felt so
me
good.
Either.
I was rested. I was rested, though, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't remember. I remember my anesthesiologist, and they asked me if I was allergic to this and what medication you're on, blah, 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 blah. And my brother, before I went in, my brother goes, ask for propofol. I go, propofol, yeah, that's some good shit. And I asked her, I go, am I going to get some propofol? She goes, yes. I go, goody. Give me.
No. I don't remember that. It was very quick.
You and I, all of us are going to go to the cabin and we're going to get a tablet of propofol. So good night, everybody.
Why would we
take
do that?
Tablet.
We wouldn't be able to talk.
I think that's best. You know, find out what's in my head. Let's get out of here. You're going to kill us all.
Where's Pat today? Where's Pat?
Pat is, I don't know. I don't know if Pat left us or not.
No.
There's something weird going on there. Because Pat sent me 1, 2, 3, 4, and it's weird, of unsent a message. So she sent a message, and then she deleted the message.
Oh, yeah.
It's just... And then it has unsent a message. I don't know what's going on with Pat. Usually John will wake her up at a time.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's just me on the show without Pat.
Uh-oh.
Sorry, kid. I cannot control that. So that means it's going to be a short show. So we're going to go right into
it.
So it's a good No, it's going to be a short one. It's a good show. So killing where some people need killing was a state policy, and you heard it. And
yeah.
I was a journalist, Patricia, you know, Evangelista. And talking about President Rodrigo Duarte. And that's it. And I cannot expand any more than what she did. Get the book. Get the book. There's a lot of things. We'll do it really quickly, and then I'll leave. We're going to get into something I think Laverne might get, like you might like. Your brain hallucinates your conscious reality. That means I'm going to lose a lot of my audience once I do that. And there's another thing. You know, we went over this before. Is there a gay mafia? That's it. Is there a cabal of the gay mafia? The rise of the gay mafia, a powerful cabal that never existed. There are the right wing just saying there's a gay mafia. It happened in Hollywood. There's a new book called Homo Intern, How the Gay Culture Liberated the Modern World. That's out too. Gay culture. I don't know. Frederick, there is some irony of the history. A term homosexual was first coined in 1868. I did not know that. Before world heterosexual even existed. So homosexual existed before heterosexual. Homosexual was set in opposition to the idea of normal sexual, a word which was later discarded for heterosexual. So we had the homos in 1868. It says, here's another story. Yet the concerns of Marx and Engels, Frederick Engels left and Karl Marx. You remember Karl Marx. The concerns of Marx and Engels were somewhat indicative of the time. The mid to late 19th century saw a growing interest in studying male same-sex attraction, harnessing an understanding of it through the pathologicalization and categorization, their words. Woods write that it was this obsession to categorize so-called unsaid male sexual impulses and behaviors that actually encourage the fear of a homosexual figure in larger society. Since there was no term to refer to the same-sex attraction, it was a threatening figure because there was no medical understanding to this identity. There is some irony to this history as the term homosexual was first coined in 1868. This desire to study and define sexual behavior further pushed researchers to uncloset the homosexual, all in effort to a sexual identity and blah, 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 blah. Soon enough, the idea of a home intern, came along. All right. Decades later, when we get to Hollywood, where is that? Battle line, here we go. The backlash against homosexuals is only compounded by the growing visibility of gay men in public life, especially in the arts and entertainment industries, which only compounded the idea of an underground conspiracy of a gay mafia. Some of the most prominent playwrights in the 1950s were gay men, including Tennessee Williams, hello, Arthur Lorenz, holla, and Edward Albee, Rainbow Children of America. Call me. Many critics were wary of the representation of American life offered by these homosexual men. In 1966, one New York Times critic mentioned the widespread perception that because these men are homosexuals, their plays present a badly distorted picture of American women, marriage, and society. Similar claims were made about the number of gay men closeted but commonly known to be gay in Hollywood, including George Cukor, Montgomery Clift, Cary Grant. Cary Grant was gay? Cary was gay? Judy. Rock Hudson? With a name like Rock, you don't think there's any warning signs of gayness? Rock Hudson? Although these men were not out, Cary Grant was gay? Rumors of their sexuality circulated widely in Hollywood and galvanized an image of Hollywood being overrun by gay men, many who allegedly wielded power and authority or autonomy. This kind of paranoia only extended to gay men. Unlike lesbians, gay men were seen as the more subversive threat because they had most public profiles as well as more likely to occupy positions of power in the entertainment industry. Edward Albee. But some two decades later, with the groundswell campaigns for freedom and visibility, the event became the gay liberation. As one outed person says, another person who was Charles Manson is gay. Charles Manson, gay. He wasn't really gay. I was just seeing if Melissa was listening. He wasn't really gay. I say that sometimes to see if she's still there. But we go back into it. So thanks to the imperial recognition gay men enjoyed in the gay liberation movement of the 1970s, the homo in turn faded into myth. Today, the homo in turn seems to be an imbalance of another epoch from the 20th century closeted gay history. All the time, awakening of fear in public life in the 1950s, American demonstrates an important narrative, reminding us that there was a time when the idea of a gay mafia ruling Hollywood was a legitimate concern, if only they were still recruiting. There you go. So if you're hearing about the gay mafia, it is not true. There you go. How the 18th century gay bar survived and thrived. There you go, 18th century gay bar. There's been gays and lesbians all around our history. And you know, we talk about gay men all the time, and we don't talk about lesbian, because this goes into the lesbian pulp fiction that saved lives, how potboilers and pinups showed gay and bisexual women they were not alone. It says when Reva Hutkin, friend from night school, offered to lend her something to read, it must have been wholly innocent. Oh, this is when I whisper and I get really creepy. It was the early 1960s in Montreal. And if it's Montreal, they smoke cigarettes, so I got to read it like I'm a French man in Montreal reading a book. It was the early 1960s in Montreal. Yeah. And Hurkin had recently married at 21. Oh, my. At the time, she says marriage was the only way a young woman could get out of her house. I'm smoking my cigarette. Since I'm a gay Frenchman, I'm smoking, gay black Frenchman, I'm smoking menthol. And I'm smoking in my smoky voice. This is my audiobook about lesbians. Thank you. Her friend presented her with one salacious, very salacious look, and then gave her a book. Then another, and another. She had millions of them. Millions, I say. And as I read on, as a French, black Frenchman, I am smoking. And I started with the cigarette, and I moved on to the marijuana. That's what I did, because I'm reading this. Covers and suggestive tagline. Okay, no coffee. Twilight women, forbidden love, illicit passion. Excuse me while I do more drugs. That was a good one. Oh, it's good to be an artist. Yeah. Her friend made a confession. I think I like that. At first, Huckins says she was horrified. Then she was bewildered. Finally, she was wondered whether she might in fact be like that, too. I wonder if Melissa's going to buy this audiobook. Soon after the two became lovers, Hudkin left her husband, and they began a new life together. Not every first encounter was lesbian. Pulp Fiction was so transformative. But for many women of the 1950s and the 1960s, these slim paperbacks were pivotal and sometimes even life savings. Excuse me. Oh, yeah, that was a good hit. Yep. Back to my writing. It was an era of just incredible isolation. A lot of us grew up thinking that we were the only ones. This is the writer Kathleen B. Forrest, who compiled the 2005 anthology, Lesbian Pulp Fiction. In her introduction to anthology, Forrest describes chancing upon Anne Barron, Odd Girl Out for sale in Detroit, Michigan. The year was 1957, and she was 18. Oh, boy, good parts coming. Uh-huh. Hold on. Smoking joint here. Yep, this is good part. Good part coming. I did not need to look at the title for clues. The cover leaped out at me from the Dutch drugstore rack. A young woman with sensuous intent on her face, seated on a bed, leaning over a prone woman, her hands on the other woman's shoulder, she writes, overwhelming need led me to walk a gauntlet of fear up to the cash register. The fear was so intense that I remember nothing more, only that I stumbled out of the store in possession of what I knew I must have. Naughty, naughty little bitch. A book as necessary to me as air. Forrest's experience was not atypical. In a 1995 essay, Donna Allegra recounts grappling with feelings of embarrassment and shame on her way up to the front desk, but however hard she found it, she wrote, it was absolutely necessary. This is her voice, by the way, but she smoked a lot. It was absolutely necessary for me to have them. I shouldn't have smoked those menthol cigarettes when I was 5. I needed them the way I needed food and shelter for survival. Women like Allegra and Forrest didn't have to look far for their fix. American drugstores and airport bookstores sold lesbian Pulp Fiction quite openly. The novels were displayed cheek to jowl with the stories of alien invasion, alien lesbians, oh my, ooh, and Nazi torture. Pulp novels had covers and taglines that promised readers everything from sex traps of vacationing to she-wolves to glimpse into the intimate sex needs of America, 900,000 young widows. And young widows on the wall, 900,000 young widows. If one woman happened to fall, 88,000 women on the wall. You know the song. Publishers likely never intended any of these books to tumble into the hands of impressionable young women, and certainly not those about lesbian love. A publisher revolution in the 1940s had put millions of inexpensive paperbacks in the pockets of soldiers. A democratic way to entertain troops that transformed the way people thought about paperback books. Pulp Fiction was the end result. The book offered as many racy as there were sexual proclivities or proclivities. It was procked, baby. All marketed to the men who had now come from the war. They were cheap and disposable, designed to be read and tossed out. Yet most successful among them sold in hundreds of thousands or even the millions, as many of them were lesbian pulps. Torres, 1950 novel, Women's Barracks, is often cited as the first example of the junior, and one that launched hundreds more. Inspired by her own experience of war, the novel tells the tale of a torrid affair between butch officer types and their female subordinates. It sold 2.5 million copies and was the 244th bestseller novel in the United States before 1975, despite being banned for obscenity in multiple states. The Price of Salt. There you go. So it goes on and on and on. Ooh, that looks good. It goes on and on and on about lesbian books. And it was vilified because they're lesbians. And it's a big shame. I'm looking at the picture and you can tell they're lesbians. You can look at a woman and you know it's a lesbian. I have done that many times. I have my lesbian gar and my gaydar up all the time. And I know they're lesbians. I'll say, hey, how you doing, sweetheart? Get away from me or I'll pepper fray you. Lesbo, you're a lesbo. I spot them and I out them. That's how you do it. When we come back, it's going to be a short show today. When we come back, your brain hallucinates your conscious reality. How's that? We're all hallucinating all the time. This is what this guy says. We're all hallucinating all the time. Even right now. It's just that when we agree about our hallucination, we call that reality. Huh. So if you're hallucinating me right now on this show, I've got 411s in the studio. But if you all agree on the same hallucination, we call that reality. We'll be right back with that. And that's it. We'll be right back. I want to play some Christmas music, I guess. And I can't find it. Let me see if I can get some Christmas music. And if you have any Christmas music, I got to finish my Christmas album that I'm sending out. If you have any Christmas music, I'd like to know about it. This is my favorite. This is my ultimate favorite. I play it all the time. And we'll be right back with, if we're thinking about the same hallucination, then this is your conscious reality. And I'll explain when we get back. You're listening to Hammer Radio, 96.7 BT Radio.
So this is Christmas.
We'll be right back.
And what have you done? Another year over, and you won't just be gone. And so this is Christmas. I hope you have fun. The near and the dear ones, the old and the young.
Christmas spirit, I want to give you some Christmas cheer. So I pulled up the Sexy Christmas Erotica 216 books. Yes, there are erotica books for Christmas. The 30 best erotic novels to curl up with. 56 best erotic books full of sex scenes to read. So they do have adult Christmas stories, really. Even as sacred as Christmas, they have adult Christmas stories. Wow. Oh, this must be a good one. Is that on Christmas? Christmasness? Adult Christmas stories. The Spanking Good Christmas. Interesting. Let's see what that's about. That's like number one. It's called A Spanking Good Christmas. Can a gift certificate to a fetish club and a pervertible Christmas decoration bring two coworkers together? Oh, sounds like a love story. Huh. Let's see. Spanking Good Christmas. Let's see the characters in this. Sandy. I got to read it again as my perverted voice with smoking cigarettes. It's sexier that way. Sandy has fantasized about spanking Marley. Ever since her fellow designer admitted to missing the sexual kink after ending a short-lived relationship. Rigging the office gift exchange is simple compared to admitting her growing feelings for another woman. Let me do drugs. I'm reading on now. Marley can't believe Cindy's thoughtful present. This is getting good. The gift certificate to New York City's notorious fetish clubs, Bottoms Up, would be a perfect for Cindy herself. We're the one swinging the paddle. Ooh, I bet you Cindy has a nice good bum. That reminds me of the Christmas fetish song. Doo-dee-bum-ba-bum-bum. Bum-ba-bum-bum on my drum. Bottoms Up would be perfect if Cindy herself were the one swinging the paddle. But admitting to having a thing for her coworker could ruin a perfectly good working relationship as well as a treasured friendship. This is on sale now. It has 3.53 ratings. About the author, she's a bestseller. Her name is Roz Lee, and she's an author of 30 romances. The first was The Lust Boat. The Lust Boat, exciting and new. Come aboard, bring a towel for two. Okay, you know the boat. There you go. That's her book. Here's another one. Here's another Christmas book, so I'm giving you Christmas ideas. There's a good-looking black man on the cover, and it says a date for hire. Beautiful black man who looks really groomed. And ladies, you know the present he has under his bush or tree, just in case you're Jewish, you're his Hanukkah bush and your Christmas tree. And don't forget to kiss his mistletoe. And here's the story. I will read it in my drug voice smoking cigarettes again. Thank you. When former high school classmate unexpectedly reunite. Oh. Oh, what a hit. Will it be a second chance at romance with her crush? When Amaya Walker hires a landscape designer, oh my, the last person she expects is her unrequited high school crush. She was a chubby nerd. He was the handsome heartbreaker who was out of her league. But now this plus-size diva is a record executive who's calling the shots. Pause for drugs. Thank you. Reading on more of this shit. Jet Thomas deeply regrets not asking Amaya out in high school, but as a client, she's off limits. they reconciled friendship leads to a forbidden relationship, but can it survive insecurities, family obligations, secrets from the past? Who cares? Who cares? Ah, figures there'll be a woman writing that. Give me more smut and dirt. That's what I came in for. I don't need erotica. I want smut and dirt. Just tell it like it is, my friend. So these are your Christmas books. Let me see. What else is in your Christmas books? Because I'm all about Christmas. A Christmas Tale is not what you think either. It's an adult Christmas tale. The Adventures of the Christmas Pudding. Oh, my. Christmas Under the Tucson Stars. Santa's Baby. Horny Holidays, number one. Ooh. Let's see what happened with Santa's Baby. Ooh. Remy wasn't looking for the hottest hookup of her life when she volunteered as a Christmas elf. This could be good. Yes. An elf on the shelf. Yes. Especially not from her ex-girlfriend's dad. What? But now all she wants is to sit on Santa's lap and let him make her filthiest fantasies come true. Ooh, this is good stuff. CW features brief mention of spousal death. He's a willer. Age gap 34 and 55. Light daddy. Kink and consensual reverse. I don't know what somnophilia is, role play. What the fuck is that? But I want some of that philia. These are Christmas books that you must have. Must have. In God we trust, all others pay cash. That's another book. In God we trust, all others pay cash. That's a good book I recommend. One more. There's a couple of books. Nothing Lasts Forever, Die Hard. These are adult books for Christmas. Nothing Lasts Forever, Die Hard. Let's take a look at that. It's a bestseller. It's for blockbuster film Die Hard and Bruce Willis, right? I don't remember that. What the hell? Bruce Willis blew away audience and an unstoppable hero as John McClane, author Roderick Thorpe, knocked out thriller readers with the bestseller that started all. A dozen heavily armed terrorists have taken hostages, issued demands, and promised bloodshed, all according to the plan. There you go. That's for you, Bloodshed for Christmas, Nothing Lasts Forever, by Roderick Thorpe. There you go. And one last book. Oh, here we go. For you religious people, The Bishop's Wife. What's going on with her? The film The Bishop's Wife, starring Cary Grant, was nominated for Best Picture in 1947. It was remade The Preacher's Wife, starring Denzel Washington, in 1996. The Preacher's Wife. Never seen it. An angel comes down from the heavens to help a bishop build a cathedral and ends up falling in love with his wife. Bishop Harry Brugman doesn't know how he would feel. You know what? I'm already out. Shut up. Get to the dirty parts. Nobody has time for this and this romance. I'm done. Well, there you go. Those are my books for Christmas. You know, it says here, are we hallucinating or are we're with each other's reality right now? That's what you're waiting for. And we'll get to that when I come right back. Are we really hallucinating?
I'm always curious as to what kind of retards write those books. Just the titles. Right? I am. I hear them like, what? Well, put a candy cane up my vag and come and come on. Pastor Don didn't like that, and he probably left.
He did leave. He left at the first title. I don't want to burn in hell. But
he doesn't want to hear that stuff.
That's one here. I know some people fantasize about that. I don't know.
It's bizarre. Dude, it's like...
It is.
I don't know. It's like little kids, like high school shit.
It almost does it. It almost does, right? I can see... I can see it in the 50s and the 60s where we didn't have access to so much sex and all this stuff, and you're going, ooh, you know, shocking. But does it play well in 2024?
No.
You know.
It's just stupid. Sit on my lap with my heart on. I'm Santa. Woo! Come on. Really?
Come here, Santa's little elf.
Oh, my. I don't know.
Well, sometimes people want to get lost in their fantasies, but I can't. You'd be surprised.
Fantasies sexual fantasies about Santa? Come on.
Yeah. Well, he only comes once a year. He only comes once a year. There you go.
I don't know.
How come there's a reason you go, ho, ho, ho? Why is he saying that? Why can't he go, ha, ha, ha? But we know. Then it will come down your Christmas tree or come down your chimney.
See that? You like that crap.
Who, me?
You.
Well, I can
tingle my balls and all that.
Tingle my balls, bitch.
Yeah. Yeah. You'd be like more like one of those evil Santas.
I would. You write my evil stories. Hello, my Christmas bitches. Write some more stories. We're going to get to the New York cellar. Yeah.
An evil Santa.
That's right.
On Tamika. Is that what they call it?
On Tamika. Huh?
Is it Krampus?
I don't. Oh, Krampus is evil. That's the evil one.
Yeah.
People don't know Krampus is getting more and more popular. Did you know that?
I bet.
More and more popular. He's evil.
Mm. Mm-hmm. That's what we're going to call you, Krampus.
Krampus. Mm-hmm. Hey. Hello, kids.
Maybe Pat left because she found the light. And she realized you were Krampus. Right?
You know, it is strange. You know, I'm beginning to... Let me see if I got it last thing. Yeah, because you know what's weird? Because usually
what?
I would get John says she's on her way or something. I would get this.
Yeah.
I did get Good Morning, Pat. The show starts in 20 minutes. And I did get a look. So they knew... But I said I'm on the air, but there is no. So either she slept through it and she deleted four messages. I have no idea.
I'm worried about
her.
I
have no idea. Why?
It was a Frenchman that came to her house. And he showed her the way. No, Pat, I'm kidding with you.
Now she's missing, right? Oh, I'm a psychic. But when we come back. And thank you, Melissa. And
sorry.
Here's Melissa keeping me company. Thank you. No, don't be sorry. I love
You're
your
welcome.
Humor.
No, my garbage disposal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, when we that should be the theme of the show.
Oh, yeah.
The garbage. Well, when we come back, I know Laverne and maybe Melissa really want to hear this.
About
your brain.
This,
yeah, your brain hallucinates and your conscious reality. I mean, this guy is pretty damn good. It's going to make you think, am I real or am I just a hallucination? And if you're hearing this hallucination and Laverne is hearing this hallucination, is this your reality or no? We're going to find out. We'll be right back because Brian is going to take a Christmas piss. We'll be right back.
Hey, man, did you hear that?
Hey, everybody, Santa's here.
Aw, there ain't no Santa Claus.
Yes, there is.
There is,
too, man. He's here.
Merry Christmas, boys.
Red Peter.
Come on, you swinging hamsters. Get over here. We're going to sing us a happy Christmas song.
Oh, no. Not another corny, stupid song.
Yeah, no way, Santa. You tell him, Ronnie. Yeah, no way. No
get
way.
Over here and sing or I'll wring your little neck. Grab your nuts, hamsters, gather round with me. Forget about all that teasing. We're breaking out the holly and aluminum tree, cause it's that jolly season.
boy.
I know you've been naughty, but have you been nice? That's only Santa's business.
That's right, Rex.
He's making his list and he's checking it twice.
Huh? Holy shit, it's Christmas.
Santa comes just once a year.
Tell him it's
just like you read. That's what we need.
Hey, wait
you
a minute.
You got a soft spot for reindeer.
Oh, that's nice.
Especially Rudolph Derriere.
Hey, knock it off, fellas, it's a holiday. Go on and give Santa a big kiss.
No way.
You can play hide the hamster on a one-horse sleigh.
Hey, wait a minute.
Holy shit, it's Christmas.
Hey, what happened to my lyric sheet? Anyone seen my lyrics?
Heck, we don't need no lyric sheet, Rip. We know our parts by heart. Right, fellas?
Yeah, sure. I know my parts, Audrey.
Yeah, me too.
Well, that's great, guys. I love Christmas songs.
Santa tried reaching up the neighbor's blouse after drinking all the eggnog.
Is that necessary?
Passed out in the bathroom for an hour or two. Squashing off a Yule.
Godfrey!
Disappear. Keep on the lookout for Mr. Gear.
Santa Little
is in the rear.
Roast nuts chestin' on an open fire. Santa's tongue stuck to the doorknob.
What?
His balls got funneled by a caroling choir while the parson gave him a hand.
What?
The sleigh came down and took him away. The whole damn crowd was dismissed.
Cause it's time to be jolly and it's time to be gay.
You know, what is reality? Reality is our own reality. Some people say you're heaven, and I've been hearing this a lot. If it's your heaven, then it's your heaven. Do we create our own heaven? And I don't know if I want to create my own heaven because I think I'm going to forget some people. And, you know, so our reality, is it really your reality or is it a subconscious reality? Meaning that, let's say you dream about someone, all right? And you have a wet dream or you have a sensual dream and you have this and you have that. Some people believe soul traveling. Did it happen? Remember, have you ever dreamed anything that was so real that you thought it might have happened for a minute? It was so intense. A forbidden thing, our subconscious is traveling. Did we have sex? And if we didn't, why we have the physical reaction of our body of the thought that we had? Well, this guy, his name is, I'm not going to tell you his name. He'll introduce himself.
No.
But listen to what he has to say. And it's very interesting. The title of it is Your Brain Hallucinates Your Conscious Reality. Your brain hallucinate your conscious reality. It's deep. Give it a shot. Here we go.
Just over a year ago, for the third time in my life, I ceased to exist. I was having a small operation. My brain was filling with anesthetic. I remember a sense of detachment and falling apart, and coldness. And then I was back, drowsy and disoriented, but definitely there. Now, when you wake from a deep sleep, you might feel confused about the time or anxious about oversleeping, but there's always a basic sense of time having passed, of a continuity between then and now. And coming around from anesthesia is very different. I could have been under for 5 minutes, 5 hours, 5 years, or even 50 years. I simply wasn't there. It was total oblivion. Anesthesia, it's a modern kind of magic. It turns people into objects, and then we hope back again into people. And in this process is one of the greatest remaining mysteries in science and philosophy. How does consciousness happen? Somehow, within each of our brains, the combined activity of many billions of neurons, each one a tiny biological machine, is generating a conscious experience. And not just any conscious experience, your conscious experience right here and right now. How does this happen? Well, answering this question is so important because consciousness for each of us is all there is. Without it, there's no world, there's no self, there's nothing at all.
There are Dell Edge devices that scale up conservation at a level that had never been seen before.
Having solutions that can overcome that challenge of scale and just really enable actual meaningful conservation.
Hold on, that's not it. That was an ad. Going back to it now.
And when we suffer consciously, whether it's through mental illness or pain. And if we can experience joy and suffering, what about other animals? Might they be conscious too? Do they also have a sense of self? And as computers get faster and smarter, maybe there'll come a point, maybe not too far away, when my iPhone develops a sense of its own existence. Now, I actually think the prospects for a conscious AI are pretty remote. And I think this because my research is telling me that consciousness has less to do with pure intelligence and more to do with our nature as living and breathing organisms. Consciousness and intelligence are very different things. You don't have to be smart to suffer, but you probably do have to be alive. In the story I'm going to tell you, our conscious experiences of the world around us and of ourselves within it are kinds of controlled hallucinations that happen with, through, and because of our living bodies. Now, you might have heard that we know nothing about how the brain and body give rise to consciousness. Some people even say it's beyond the reach of science altogether. But in fact, the last 25 years have seen an explosion of scientific work in this area. If you come to my lab at the University of Sussex, you'll find scientists from all different disciplines, and sometimes even philosophers, all of us together trying to understand how consciousness happens and what happens when it goes wrong. And the strategy is very simple. I'd like you to think about consciousness in the way that we've come to think about life. Now, at one time, people thought the property of being alive could not be explained by physics and chemistry, that life had to be more than just mechanisms. But people no longer think that. As biologists got on with the job of explaining the properties of living systems in terms of physics and chemistry, things like metabolism, reproduction, and homeostasis, the basic mystery of what life is started to fade away, and people didn't propose any more magical solutions, like a force of life or an élan vital. So as with life, so with consciousness. Once we start explaining its properties in terms of things happening inside brains and bodies, the apparently insoluble mystery of what consciousness is should start to fade away. At least that's the plan. So let's get started. What are the properties of consciousness? What should a science of consciousness try to explain? Well, for today, I'd just like to think of consciousness in two different ways. There are experiences of the world around us, full of sights, sounds, and smells, this multi-sensory, panoramic, 3D, fully immersive inner movie. And then there's conscious self, the specific experience of being you or being me, the lead character in this inner movie, and probably the aspect of consciousness we all cling to most tightly. Let's start with experiences of the world around us, and with the important idea of the brain as a prediction engine. Now, imagine being a brain. You're locked inside a bony skull trying to figure what's out there in the world. There's no light inside the skull. There's no sound either. All you've got to go on are streams of electrical impulses which are only indirectly related to things in the world, whatever they may be. So perception, figuring out what's there, has to be a process of informed guesswork in which the brain combines these sensory signals with its prior expectations or beliefs about the way the world is to form its best guess of what caused those signals. The brain doesn't hear sound or see light. What we perceive is its best guess of what's out there in the world. Let me give you a couple of examples of all this. Now, you might have seen this illusion before, but I'd like you to think about it in a new way. If you look at those two patches, A and B, they should look to you to be very different shades of gray, right? But they are, in fact, exactly the same shade, and I can illustrate this if I put up a second version of the image here and join the two patches with a gray-colored bar, and you can see there's no difference. It's exactly the same shade of gray. And if you still don't believe me, I'll bring the bar across and join them up. It's a single-colored block of gray. There's no difference at all. So this isn't any kind of magic trickery. It's the same shade of gray, but take it away again, and it looks different. So what's happening here is that the brain is using its prior expectations built deeply into the circuits of the visual cortex, that a cast shadow dims the appearance of a surface so that we see B as lighter than it really is. The here's one more example, which shows just how quickly the brain can use new predictions to change what we consciously experience. Have a listen to this. Sounded strange, right? Have a listen again and see if you can get anything. Still strange. Now listen to this.
I think breakfast is a really terrible idea.
Which I do. So you heard some words there, right? Now listen to the first sound again. I'm just going to replay it. Yeah? So you can now hear words there. Once more for luck. Okay, so what's going on here is the remarkable thing is the sensory information coming into the brain hasn't changed at all. All that's changed is your brain's best guess of the causes of that sensory information, and that changes what you consciously hear. Now, all this puts the brain basis of perception in a bit of a different light. Instead of perception depending largely on signals coming into the brain from the outside world, it depends as much, if not more, on perceptual predictions flowing in the opposite direction. We don't just passively perceive the world, we actively generate it. The world we experience comes as much, if not more, from the inside out as from the outside in. Let me give you one more example of perception as this active, constructive process. Here we've combined immersive virtual reality with image processing to simulate the effects of overly strong perceptual predictions on experience. In this panoramic video, we've transformed the world, which is in this case Sussex campus, into a psychedelic playground. We've processed the footage using so familiar, so unified, and so continuous that it's difficult not to take it for granted, but we shouldn't take it for granted. There are, in fact, many different ways we experience being a self. There's the experience of having a body and of being a body. There are experiences of perceiving the world from a first-person point of view. There are experiences of intending to do things and of being the cause of things that happen in the world. And there are experiences of being a continuous and distinctive person over time, built from a rich set of memories and social interactions. Now, many experiments show, and psychiatrists and neurologists know very well, that these different ways in which we experience being a self can all come apart. And what this means is the basic background experience of being a unified self is a rather fragile construction of the brain, another experience which, just like all others, requires explanation. So let's return to the bodily self. How does the brain generate the experience of being a body and of having a body? Well, just the same principles apply. The brain makes its best guess about what is and what is not part of its body. And there's a beautiful experiment in neuroscience to illustrate this. And unlike most neuroscience experiments, this is one you can do at home. All you need is one of these and a couple of paintbrushes.
Tori.
Okay. Well, it's getting a little in-depth. Here's some of the comments on it. We're all hallucinating all the time, even right now. It's just that when we agree about our hallucinations, we can call it reality. That's who this person is. With a greater sense of understanding comes a greater sense of wonder. That's who this person is. When the end of the consciousness comes, there's nothing to be afraid of, nothing at all. When the time comes, he's right, but before, it's very dreadful thought to become nothing. That's, what's his name again, who's telling you about the video. Here's one person. I saw the video a while ago, but I just rewatched it, and I have to say this is one of the best videos I ever seen on YouTube. His presentation is wonderful and engaging, and what he says is up to date with neuroscience. That you could tell that's part of his staff, please. Absolutely love this. We don't passively perceive the world, we actively generate it. So blah, 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 blah. Incredible seeing this guy live. What a legend. Okay, the brain is the most important organ, says the brain. Okay, well, my penis disagrees with you. So there you go. What is your reality? What is your, one person's reality is another person's conspiracy, what you believe. And the thing about it is when people think Donald Trump is a nut, which he is, he should be certified if you heard the call. But if you believed a lie, is it a lie? It's not a lie if you believe it. So we deal with the brain all the time, and then when we go on drugs, that's another thing. Whoa. And all through life, we always go back to the Native Indian. We always think, well, they use it must be cool, because the Indians used to use the peyote and hallucinogenics and LSD to go into war. And we say, well, you know, the Indians used it. Yeah, but they lost. Anywho. We always say, well, you know, the Indians dropped the mushrooms. Yes, they did. Well, the Indians used peyote, so I should. Sure. If you want to ride half-naked on a horse with a bow and arrow, be my guest. Look what it did for them. So using drugs can alter the mind. Is it really alter your mind, or is it to alter your thinking or alter your consciousness? Some people believe that and heightens it and enlightens it. Some people believe marijuana is the gateway, or mushrooms is the gateway to your inner soul or your inner self. I say no. It just makes me want to eat more, and I gain weight. I have never done hallucinogenics. I will not do it. My mind's already far out, but I will not mess with that. I'm afraid it doesn't come back to me. I think we think too much about it. Here's something. We got some time. How much time do we have? Ooh, we don't have enough time. But let me tell you how the brain works. Here's Jim Carrey. One of the funniest guys around. And I think we're only going to play 5 minutes of it because we don't have that much time. And he's going to talk to you about depression, how his mind works. He's a funny guy, but here we go.
I'm a Christian, I'm whatever you want me to be. It all comes down to the same thing. You're in a loving place or you're in an unloving place. I just want to be myself. If I lose a few fringe people who can't deal with the fact that there's other forces in the world, that's okay with me.
The meaning of life? You want to know what it is? Love yourself.
Jim Carrey is loved by many. Known for his roles in Dumb and Dumber, The Mask, Ace Ventura, and many more. He's made a name as one of the funniest people on Earth. Although for decades, there has been a spiritual side to Jim that is often overlooked or misinterpreted. In 2009, he told a story about a mystical experience he had, which pushed him down a path of spiritual awakening.
A few months ago, after knowing Eckhart Tolle for a while and studying the books...
Did he say Eckhart? Did we say Eckhart? Did he really say that? Let me see.
Which pushed him down a path of spiritual awakening.
He said Eckhart Tolle, not Eckhart. Eckhart Tolle.
Close.
No.
Well, this isn't my subconscious mind, therefore she's a reality. Am I dreaming, or Melissa's really here? Or is it a figment of my imagination? I don't know.
Or is it both?
Is it both? Uh-oh. More drugs. We'll be right back. Okay. Here's Jim Carrey.
In 2009, he told a story about a mystical experience he had, which pushed him down a path of spiritual awakening.
A few months ago, after knowing Eckhart Tolle for a while and studying the books, I woke up and I suddenly got it. I understood suddenly how thought was just an illusory thing. And how thought is responsible for, if not all, most of the suffering we experience. And then I suddenly felt like I was looking at these thoughts from another perspective. And I wondered, who is it that's aware that I'm thinking? And suddenly I was thrown into this expansive, amazing feeling of freedom from myself, from my problems. I saw that I was bigger than what I do. I was bigger than my body. I was everything and everyone. I was no longer a fragment of the universe. I was the universe. And ever since that day, I've been trying to get back there. It's like riding a wave. Sometimes I'm on, sometimes I'm off. But at least I know where I want to go. And I want to take as many people with me as I possibly can, because the feeling is amazing. You know, it's our intention. Our intention is everything. Nothing happens on this planet without it. Not one single thing has ever been accomplished without intention. So I started thinking about my life, and I started thinking about this conference and what we're about, and I looked back and I thought, well, I was two people my whole life. I was in the living room entertaining people, being a monkey, you know, doing my thing for the company and trying to relieve my mother, who was suffering. She had rheumatoid arthritis and colitis and everything under the sun that was nagging at her, and she was depressed. And I wanted her to be free. And I wanted her to realize that her life was worth something, because she gave birth to someone who's worth something. And then I would go into my room and I would sit with the legal pad of the little kid. I would sit there and I would try to figure out what it meant, what it was all about. Why are we here? What is this?
Jim describes that he once read from Buddha that all spirituality is relieving from suffering. Similarly, Buddha summarizes the reality of suffering in the four truths. One, our lives are pervaded by suffering, both obvious and subtle. Two, there is an identifiable cause of our suffering. Three, because we know its cause, we can free ourselves from suffering. And four, there is a specific path we can follow to end suffering, which consists of meditation, wisdom, and ethical living. Buddha's teachings on suffering resonated with Jim, as he realized that he was trying to relieve his mother from suffering all along.
One day, I read something from Buddha that said that all spirituality is about relieving suffering. And I suddenly realized, that's what I'm doing in the other room. And I'm aligned. You know, my purpose is aligned with this. So I felt incredibly lucky. I lose sight of that all the time. I get caught up in different concerns, ego concerns. But I'm so lucky to be a part of this community and to do something that is of value.
I do not do a podcast, UFC event. I don't do anything without using this algorithm. Most of the things you do in life are bars, and they don't cause you anything else.
And he's relieved more than just his mother from suffering. With countless timeless performances, there's something for everyone to find escape from their own life's strife. One of which being his portrayal of Andy Kaufman in the 1999 film Man on the Moon. Following the film, he had another awakening experience where he saw through his ego.
It was definitely an important moment in the process where I found myself subjugating Jim Carrey for Andy Kaufman and Tony Clifton, and then at the end of it looking for Jim Carrey again and having trouble finding him. And at a certain point I realized, hey, wait a second, you know, if it's so easy to lose Jim Carrey, who the hell is Jim Carrey? Or I was kind of watching from another place. And there's been a series of kind of awakenings I've had in my life. And, you know, people chalk it up to depression and all that stuff. I think that, you know, grief and sadness and all those things are the ticket home to nothing. I think that was a part of the process. There's been several other awakenings, and yet still I have a lot of egoic attachments that pull my attention and focus.
This experience suggests that the distinction between Jim Carrey and his iconic roles can become blurred. However, Jim has an interesting perspective on this notion.
You said you've kind of disassociated yourself with Jim Carrey, but does it, you know, everyone, we see your face, there's so many iconic roles and so many of our favorite movies, from Eternal Sunshine, Dumb and Dumber, and everything. Does
that
it,
has nothing to do with Jim Carrey.
That has nothing to do with Jim Carrey.
Nothing at all to do with Jim Carrey. That's just what happened. And it is wonderful, and there's insane gratitude around it, and wonder around it. How did it happen? And fulfillment from it. I look back at it, and I see something beautiful that rose out of nothing and happened for no one. You know, it just was.
Like, it was almost like every 6 months to a year, we saw this, like, huge Jim Carrey comedy. Do you miss that?
No, I honestly, there's nothing but this. You're my universe. You know what I mean? So I'm not looking forward, and I'm not looking backward, and I'm not, you know, the aspect of this that's backward to me is like a contemporary thing. What's good about this movie? It's not a look back. It's a contemporary concept. It's what's happening right now inside everybody. Is they're going, who am I? And they're depressed, you know, a lot of people, because they're trying to hold up an image in the world. And that's what depression is. You know, people go like, oh, Jim's been depressed and stuff. Well, yeah, I was depressed when I was trying to be the Wizard of Oz instead of the sweaty guy behind the curtain. But now I know that Oz is the character, you know. And you know, I think everybody deals with that. Everybody walks around and they go like, why am I depressed? Well, it's because you're trying to be something for the world, you know, and as soon as you let that go, better things happen, because they're just happening. But it's not, you know, now it's just sadness. You know, sadness comes, happiness comes, it's the weather that flies by the sky. It doesn't sit on you long enough to drown you, you know.
As mentioned, Jim has struggled with depression. He previously mentioned depression as his body needing deep rest from putting on an act. Here he takes us further into that journey.
I've read a couple of places where you said you've struggled with depression from time to time. Some Prozac for a long time.
Yep,
some Prozac for a long time. And I'm not sure. I mean, it may have helped me out of a jam for a little bit, but people stay on it forever. You know, I had to get off at a certain point, because I realized that, you know, everything's just okay.
No peaks and valleys.
There are peaks, there are valleys, but they're all kind of carved and smoothed out, and it feels like a low level of despair you live in, where you're not getting any answers, but you're living okay, and you can smile at the office, you know, but it's a low level of despair.
And you don't take any of them? You don't take anything there?
Nothing. I don't take anything. I rarely drink coffee. I'm very serious about no alcohol, no drugs. Life is too beautiful.
After talking to you for a couple of hours, I mean, I get the sense you are a big bundle of conflicting emotions.
Really? Don't you get that sense from me?
Well, I think you're very emotional about a lot of things. It's all very close to the surface.
Yeah, it is. I've decided to be there. I only act in the movies.
And his level of authenticity is apparent in these interviews. Perhaps it's because he's able to detach from his psyche and see a bigger picture.
I think that we're all trying to add things to ourselves so that we can finally define ourselves, and then everybody will get us and they'll go, okay, this is what you are. And then if you actually get there, you will find it so empty that you'll realize that's really not what it's about. It's about not only, you know, just going with the flow, but it's about not taking it personal, you know? It's like the difference between a house and my house is a world of difference, and it's the my that's the problem, you know? So you can do all this without the my involved, you know? You can do it in a way that it's not, life isn't happening to you, it's happening for,
yeah,
you know, for the good of everyone. It's just it's a giant, you know, field of consciousness dancing for itself, and you're here to make me
happy, and you're to kind of, it's making itself happy, you know? It's like one soul. That's how I feel. I feel like, you know, people say, well, I have a soul. You don't have a soul. There's no you, but I feel like there is a soul, and it includes everything.
Yeah.
And when you wake up in the morning and you feel like I'm the universe, you don't have to reach for the stars, you know? You can just let life happen.
Yeah.
And walk through the doors.
There you go. Life happens, right? You know, it's funny. We have somebody in there. Okay, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to, let me see where Pat is. Pat's gone. I'm going to say goodbye. We have a person who comes into a room. We love them. We give them a hard time. We have like 411s in this studio.
Oh.
I'm not going to say his name. I'm going to keep him anonymous because he comes on the show about Mr. Solution.
Oh, my God.
And, but if you hear Mr. Solution talk, he will talk about a book he read.
Oh.
Or he learned this and he would reference a book.
But it's
everything
horrible.
About life, every subject, every title. He will reference a book. And I'm saying, you poor bastard.
Oliver.
It's like, you don't live life. You read about life. You read about relationships. You read about this. You read about that. But you're not experiencing life. And those, I feel, in my opinion, when we have to ask what life is all about, I don't think there's one definitive answer because we're not, human beings are not absolute. And that word happiness, that word, and it gives us a lot of stress that we have to find it. And we're always looking for it. We're always looking for it. I mean, you could be the richest guy in the world or richest woman in the world, and then you go down in flames and everything, and you're a product of your own universe of being successful, and you finally made it, then you got to keep it. It's a lot of work. Puts a lot of stress on the body. And then there's some people that says, hey, you can heal your body. Lately I've been around people who say, you need positive thoughts. Just the other day, my brother said that. You don't need to be upset. You got to think positively. And there is some scientific study saying that sometimes they did the brain scan that positivity does heal the body. Some people believe that. And it's been proven that negativity declines the body. It brings on stress. It brings on strokes. It brings on depression, which is true. You rarely get to see a happy person who's depressed. So there's something there about positive thoughts. But do we ask ourselves too much? Do we wonder too much? Do we ask the question too much? And we're always searching for an answer, and we're not living life the way it is. Do we have to know why a brain or a body or a thought does this? Why can't we just enjoy that it does? Do we know enough about the human body? I can give you 50,000 books that will tell you about the human body and how the brain works, and they will contradict each other. I give you 50,000 books about religion, and they will contradict each other. So what is the result? What is the answer? I have to take part of the title of the show. Your brain hallucinates your conscious reality. It's deep. Now, if some people are deeper than me, it's going to take that to another level. But I got a small brain. And, you know, we just got to be thankful for what we got. And instead of questioning what we got and how we get here and who's this and who's our Lord, who's our God, why do we do this? Let's kill UFOs because they don't look like us. Let's go back into the war and kill the horror stories. And I even told you guys, 2 weeks ago. And as soon as I told you 2 weeks ago, it came on the news the day after. And I woke up and said, told you so. It's a horrible, horrible, horrible thing that would happen October 7th with the hostages. And the tapes are coming out. The tapes are horrific. They're leaking the tapes now. These are the tapes that the government did not want you to see. But these are the tapes that the Israelis want you to see. These are the tapes that the Palestinians don't want you to see. These are the tapes that America don't want you to see. But what the tapes are is they brutally videotape what they did to those people and what they did to the little children by putting a bullet through an infant's head, by mutilating a woman with just a scissors and cutting her vagina off and putting a bomb and let her run and explode. It's just horrific stories that are coming out that what one human being can do to another. Oh, boy. And we see that constantly because they won't let us forget because it's headline news. Yes, Virginia, there's evil in the world. There are. You cannot have good without evil. And so, yeah, I guess our feelings of hurt, anger, despair, love, happiness, sexual gratification, they're all real. They're not our subconscious. They're real. If you can feel the pain, it's real. You're not hallucinating. You're not. If you can feel love, it's real. So maybe we got to quit on it. We can get all dead about the brain is this and our consciousness and our consciousness this. Yeah, I understand. And like I said, I'll point back to Mr. Solutions. If you listen to him, he'll point out books he read about life. And I think you haven't lived it. He would ask questions about life. He would ask questions about drug use. He would ask questions about tarot reading and love and money and stuff like that because he read about it. He didn't live it. And that makes me feel sad because I think Mr. Solution should get a hit of cocaine. I think he should go in the cabin by himself, smoke some weed. I think he should get a pet. I think Cocaine Bear would be a good pet for him. You got to live life. And life is a bitch on a period. Sometimes it's unforgiving. Or life could be a menopause. You get hot, you get cold, you get hot, you get cold, you get irritable, you get crampy, you can't stay still. You just want to bust your skin and crack my head open. But all in all, live your life, love what you love. You're only here for a split minute. Reality is where you are now. Let your conscious mind do when you dream. Take the vacation when you nap and when you dream. Let your conscious mind travel and do wonderful things. And then when you wake up, we'll deal with life. But we can always know that when we go to sleep, we can travel to most beautiful places. We can have sex with whoever we want. We could be the richest person in the world. And every night we can experience that feeling. But when we wake up, we have to deal with reality, our reality. And right now we're in a world of shit, and we got to make it right. This leads to one thing. Some of you people haven't voted in years. You see what's happening to this world. Just take one look at it. You see who's running for president. It's funny. I recently went to a doctor. This was like 2 or 3 days ago. And it's funny. I never met this doctor. So he started to do small talk just to relax you, you know, that kind of thing. And then he was talking about, he asked what I did. I said I did so-and-so, so-and-so, and I also did a blog talk show. I see a lot of you 111s. I'm going off the air pretty soon, so if you want to talk to me, put your hand up. Because I may, don't look at the time, because I may be leaving in about 2 minutes. So if you want to talk, come on the air, you got to do it. So small talk, and asked what I did. I said I do a lot of other things, but I didn't mention the show. And he says, what do you talk about? I said, we talk about everything and politics. He goes, oh, politics, and this is a doctor I never met. I'm good at talking. I go, okay, doc, what about this? Oh, no. Are you talking politics? I go, yes, sir. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of things I'd like to talk about. Doc, what about this? Wait. Do you talk about this? Yes, I did talk about this. Oh, you know, my thoughts. I go, Doc, I'm here. I got this little thing. Well, no. I think that we'll talk later. I'm going, oh, shit. Doc, I just come in here for a procedure, and you're talking to me about the reality show. 111, you're live on the air with Melissa and your gay host, Mr. Burkett. Hello. Hello. You had your hand up, 111. Hello. I hear you. Hello.
What did you mean that Pat was gone? What do you mean? What did you mean?
I don't know. But when I don't know. I don't see Pat around anymore.
Well, where? What do you mean?
I don't see her around. Her movements tells me otherwise. Away from what she usually does. Okay, 111, you have your hand up. Are you going to talk, or do I put you back on hold?
Don't do that anymore. Come on. They probably are busy.
You make, probably, I'm putting back on hold. Yeah, she made moves that are not usually
she,
Pat
maybe
moves.
She's not well today.
No, that's not it. Everybody has a rhythm. Everybody has a rhythm. Everybody do certain things. What was strange was when she tried to contact me.
No,
how can you do this?
No.
Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4 messages she deleted. So she was talking about.
Well, you can retract them. You know, take them back.
No, I can't.
No,
it says unsent. That's really weird. It's unsent.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. You know, I don't know.
All right, let's not jump to conclusions.
About what?
That she's gone. Do you know what I mean? You're writing reality. Did you understand what he was saying?
Who?
When he, Jim, either whoever was
Jim
talking.
Carrey? Jim
yeah.
Carrey?
Yeah.
Well, 111 left. No, I mean, you're listening to a guy. See, I'm on the other end. Either you could jump in with Jim Carrey, or you could jump out and be an observer. Jim Carrey was on Prozac for a long period of time. Jim Carrey was fighting depression for a long period of time. Jim Carrey did a lot of drugs for a long period of time. Jimmy withdrew from society and life. If you ever seen the latest David Letterman beard, Jim Carrey has that same beard.
Yeah, yeah.
So listening to a person who was on Prozac, who was depressed, searching for something better, doesn't make me believe that he's more,
No, you don't have to listen to him. Let me give you a little example of how I feel.
Okay.
I had a person in my life who was very negative towards me in a situation.
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying terrible things. Like they were trying to
write
my life, right?
Right.
And I said to the person, I have the text, I can show you. I said, take your pen.
It wasn't me, was it?
No,
it
wasn't
me,
you. So take your pen and go write, you are not allowed in my reality anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like they knew what they were doing. And saying just terrible things that hadn't happened. They were like trying to write a story. And so consciousness that I was going to follow. Have you ever heard the saying, get out of my head, you're trying to get in my head?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I could have gone along with it, but I was like, you know what? You live your life. You write your own story. You're done. You're not my story anymore. So we're all like sort of living our own reality with what how we grew up, our belief system, our subconscious beliefs, and our conscious beliefs, right?
Sure.
You may not believe it, but if you really put your mind to it, it really is true. How often does a poor child that grew up poor end up poor their whole life in suffering? Because that's what they learn. Life is hard, you know, blah, 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 I'm going to suffer. You know what I mean? Or women that were beaten as children or men, and they keep it going. They keep it going because it seems normal to them. So it's creating, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So you're saying
you
it's creating their reality?
To him. Well, yeah, and you can have somebody step into yours and try to sway you to believe what they believe. This is going to happen. That's going to happen. You don't listen to me.
Right.
Right? So you can take on, you know what I mean?
I do.
And some people are good at it, and they'll do anything they can to just sort of step in. You know what I mean? And want you to do things their way. And see, I told you so. I told you so. I'm smarter than you. And for me, this person held some leverage because I was always told how smart they were and how they had done things the right way in life. So in the beginning, they held leverage for me. And then it was like, are you kidding me? This is my life. This is my path. Get out. Get out.
Right.
Go make your own life. Go write your own story in your own life. So we're kind of, we're writing our own story.
I agree. I agree we do. I agree that we do write our own story. But I also take it a little further. We put people in our lives for a reason, right or wrong, good or bad, for a reason.
Yeah. Or
a
season.
It's a selfish,
a reason or a season.
Well, it's a selfish reason. Some people put people in their lives who are in need of, and you can fill in the blank, okay?
Yeah.
So we know that this person is not stable. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
Maybe having a hard time. But we chose to put that person in our lives. Why? Why do we choose to put somebody in our life that we know that's destructive? We know that's destructive. We know that's violent. We know that there's mood swings. We know this person. We would not want this person in our house. But yet, we have to ask ourselves, why would we want to put this person in our life? And we do that. We do that.
Sometimes, yeah. Yeah.
Well, sometimes people think that it's a Jesuit complex. Jesuit complex comes from the Jesuit priest.
Right.
But sometimes people need to feel, and it's nothing about they're good people, but sometimes they need to feel good about themselves. So by helping others, they reinforce goodness in themselves.
Right.
And I'll make the point. I'll make a good point, and I'll be quiet. When we see a person on the street and they're panhandling, when we give them money, it's not about them. We know that they're going to get that money, sell crack, or go get food. It's not about that. It's us reassuring that we're good people. We make a story. We're helping someone. And in reality, that guy's making $500 a day. Reality. But we will see someone, and we want to help. And we'll never know who that person is. We'll never see that person again. But it reinforces us. We need to have that thing in our brain that says we're good. And we need to pat ourselves on the back that reinforces that we are good and we help someone today, which is bullshit. But that's what we need. It's this endorphins of being so good and we're helping others we don't even know about is bullshit. It is bullshit. But we need this for us to walk another day in another sunshine of we're good. Go ahead, Melissa, and that's all I have to say. Melissa?
I don't know what to say.
Well, you know what you're going to say. Go, say what you're going to say. Basically, we put people in our lives for a reason. Why do we do that?
And it can be a good reason. Maybe sometimes we even bring people in our lives that treat you nicely to show you that you do deserve to be treated nicely when you haven't been. And you see, you know, the difference. Mm. So that can be one way of looking at it, right?
Could be. It could be.
Why is everybody treating me nicely that I know, and then, you know, some particular people don't?
Right.
Right? And it makes you kind of look at it, I guess, if you open your eyes and, you know.
True.
I don't know. I've never felt like I have to help people, that they're kind of on their own. I don't want to interfere in other people's lives.
But you have
lives.
Helped. The little time that I've known you in reality.
Little time.
Real
I've
life,
known you for a long time.
I got a short-term memory.
It's been a long time.
I just
think
met your lady.
I think it's been 6 years. 6 years.
Are you serious?
At least.
Wow.
Yeah, at least, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was looking at 4, but wow. Yeah, Cindy,
Oliver's
going to
be 5. So.
Oh, yeah, I've known you way before then. You're right.
Yeah, yeah.
Cindy just reminded me last night. She goes, we've been together for 25 years. I go, what?
Wow.
What?
Wow.
Where was I? I was up
you
up
lost 5 years.
Yes. It was the happiest 5 years of my life, and I can't get it back. But.
Uh-oh.
I don't know, kiddo. You
and
know,
then sometimes it can be a simple misunderstanding, right?
I have seen you help people in real life. That's all I can say.
But I don't intentionally say, oh, I need to do this, you know, so I feel good.
I don't know.
I don't. I'm telling you, I don't.
I see you. Okay. But I see you do it. I see you've done it. You have helped people. And they're Peter and Cole and there's a lot of people, and they're not all the best people in the world, but there are people. They don't have to be the best people, but they'll seek out somebody who can guide them through certain things. And you might be the angel of guidance.
Maybe I don't
know.
True. I don't know.
It's true. And there's some people who don't accept how good they are, like you, because you're a very good person. You're very good people. And I know sometimes it's hard to look around and say, hey, I'm a very good person, because sometimes you're in a land of shit and you think you're part of the you know, the crap that spills out, you know? And no, you're not. You're a good person.
Oh, my God. This
and
kid.
There you go right there, just saying it. And you know darn well what I'm saying. Most people do not have the courage to do what you're doing now. You know what I'm talking about?
Or they
wouldn't accept it. I do know a lot of people that would reject what you're doing right now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I do too.
Okay.
I do too. Yeah.
Except you're an angel of darkness, sweetheart.
An angel of darkness. Oh, my God.
The darkness will come to you, and you put the light upon it. You're pretty damn
I know,
good.
Huh? Yeah.
You are. I want to thank the lovely Melissa. And thank you for coming in, sweetheart. And I want to thank my little homie, Big O.
Oh, he's
Oliver,
here.
He will inherit my show one day. And
he'll
make the show better. He will.
Yeah.
He will put law and order in this. It's a new sheriff in town, and it's Oliver. I want to thank Laverne, she's probably listening. Robin, I want to thank you. I know you're listening, Robin. I want to thank you. She's coming back on. Robin's coming back on pretty
soon.
She
was a lot of fun. I enjoyed her, yeah.
She's coming home. She goes, she wants to come back on the show. She'll be on. Maybe she'll take, you know, when one person goes away, another person comes on. It just happens that way. It just does.
Don't wipe Pat off yet.
Okay, I'll try not to. But I want to wish everybody happy holidays. And, sweetheart, you're the best. Thank you, Melissa.
Oh, thank you.
See you guys
okay.
tomorrow. You're welcome.
Bye.
See you guys tomorrow. Bye, everybody. Damn, I was going to play a Christmas song, and I don't have it. Here you go. See you guys tomorrow. Have a happy holidays. Tomorrow's Friday. We'll have a great show. We'll have a great show Friday. All right, people. Peace out. I'm Brian Hammer Jackson. Have a happy holiday.